Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Wendy Rosen, founder of American Made Alliance, about, you know, just that. Let's make it here in the country. Let's make the things that we consume. Let's make the things that we demand right here at home. And I know the right loves, oh, you're being a protectionist. Yeah, I kind of am. Like I've said a million times, I lock my door when I leave the house because I want to make sure that the things inside my house are secure. What I haven't done is I haven't dug a big moat around my house and put alligators in it so that the neighbors can't come over. That, my friends, is isolationism. I'm not an isolationist. But I do believe in protecting what is ours. It'll be interesting to talk to Wendy about the American Made Alliance. Also, in the third hour, we're going to talk with Washington State Labor Council President Jeff Johnson about the really just the radical workers' comp bill that went through there. And the thing that gets me is Democrats did it because Democrats control the governor's mansion and the legislature. It's just amazing. Another example of knowing who your friends are sometimes. And also we're going to talk about the Boeing situation, since the right just can't let it go. They're making this out to be a, well, this is a right-to-work state versus non-right-to-work state issue. It's not. This is about Boeing outwardly breaking law. It doesn't matter where they were moving. They said, we're moving because these workers stood up for themselves. They went on strike, which is the law of the land. We're moving because of that. Didn't matter where they moved. South Carolina is a non-issue. Could have moved to Pennsylvania, it would still have been illegal. Now, the reason I like South Carolina, this is one of those little quirky things. I think their governor just has the greatest porn name in the history of politics. Good. That's kind of where we're at. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So did everybody have a good Memorial Day weekend? I know I did. Got to spend a little time home with the family. We took yesterday off to do just that, and we had a great weekend. And it was one of those things where you remember, you take time to remember the reason for the holiday, which originally was Decoration Day, where you put out flags and you memorialize those who fought and died for the country. But you also celebrate the fact that we have this freedom and that there were people who believed in this country so much that they fought for it. And I thought we had a great weekend. I hope you did. Jake, what did you do I know your brother served honorably.
Yes. Actually, some of his friends that he knew participated in the parade. In fact, they were in the 1st Division. I happen to live in a small town that actually has the biggest Memorial Day parade in the state. It was a great, great way to honor the fallen and those who served. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
And what did you do for the big holiday?
What did I do for the big holiday? Ate hot dogs, watched baseball, traditional way. Watched my favorite professional baseball team.
So you didn't sit glued to the television waiting for Sarah Palin to get to Gettysburg last night? I guess a couple hundred people.
Was it Gettysburg?
In Gettysburg. They showed up. They were hoping to be able to get a glimpse of the political diva herself. They were hoping to be able to, get a glimpse of the rolling bus. And I got to see a picture of the bus, and wow, what a beautiful piece of work. What an amazing piece of work. I'm guessing that bus has to be in the range of $350,000 for this bus. I mean, it's beautiful. And what gets me is she's trying to play this everyday, American, we're working class people, driving around in a $350,000 bus. And I guess what's interesting is this is the new game, I guess, is going to be Where's Sarah? It's kind of like Where's Waldo, only dumber. Because I don't know who would want to see this twin. But she's running around, going to be running around the Northeast, popping up wherever, because no one's allowed to see the secret itinerary. No one's allowed to know where she's going. But she's going to pop up, wherever. You may find her. It could be like Publisher's Clearinghouse. She's just going to pop up at your door one day. Just amazing. No. But I got to be honest. I had very little respect for her to begin with. I've mentioned that on a number of occasions. I've had very little respect for her because I do believe she's a gold digger. I believe she is out for number one in that order. She quit as governor. Not because she had some great love of this state, because she has love for money and there was an opportunity to cash in. What she did on Sunday, I believe, is one of the most despicable things I have ever heard a politician doing. That, my friends, is a huge statement. The fact that she would ride, and it reminds me of so many stories I've heard over the years of people doing scumbag stuff like this. But, for her to ride up in this and really to take away the meaning of the whole Rolling Thunder event, to me, just plain despicable. But I guess and then there's the part of me that says, you know what? Would I expect anything less from someone like her, someone who's very good at self-promotion, someone who's out there throwing herself at the feet of the media? Look at me. I don't know. I'm angry about that, Jake.
Oh, I understand, and I did hear, and we talked about this a little bit last week, I did hear one of the spokesmen said, no, she wasn't invited. She's kind of doing this on her own. As despicable as that is, I think in some ways she's put herself in a good situation in a political sense. She can run for president or she cannot.
She's not.
I think what she's doing is trying to get that attention again. And ultimately, what does that mean? That means that she's going to be more in demand as a speaker, and ultimately it'll be more money. Now, I think that if I were to guess, I'd say it's probably 60-40 against. I wouldn't totally rule her out, but I think in the end, if she has her druthers, she'd rather make a lot of money than run for president.
If I'm Obama, she's the one I want. If I'm Obama, she's the one. That crummy TV show she did. There's a part right at the very beginning where she says, oh, who wants to spend any time in one of those stodgy political offices? kind of justifying why she's a quitter. I would play that in every ad, in her voice. Oh, why would anybody want to spend any time in those stodgy political offices? Again, that's her mentality. And she's not going to run. She's just not. This is about putting more coin in her pocket.
Well, let's look at her base, Rick. I mean, let's be honest, I know some of our Republican friends that are listening are going to say, well, you're not being fair to the party, but she appeals to the part of the party that's anti-intellectual. And, Sarah, she's one of us. Well, okay, This is America. You can believe what you want. You can be attracted to who you want to be attracted to. You can vote for who you want to vote for. But when you get to the issues, when you get to the real meat and potatoes that someone who wants to run for president has to have at least a basic grasp of, she fails the test. It's that simple. She doesn't have the intellectual capability. She does not have what it takes to be a president. Period.
Boy, you know, that what you just said there, it popped into my head. One of our listeners sent me an email, and you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com, sent me an email with a link to a British TV show. And they, you know, because the rest of the world looks at us like we're a bunch of goofballs for even entertaining the idea that someone as shallow as Palin could even be considered for the highest office in the land. But they went to Columbus, Ohio, it was, and they had, you know, talked to a number of Palin supporters and asked them to identify one policy that they were in favor of hers, and they couldn't, obviously. And this one guy, he goes, well, you know, I think her strong suit is in foreign policy because they're bordered with Russia. And that just, you know, it just belly laughs out of the people in Britain because we're that demented and twisted. But another listener sent me this letter that was written by someone who went to the Rolling Thunder, and I thought I would share it because these are the people that she really ticked off. The letter reads, for some time now you have been amusing, albeit mostly incoherent annoyance, but today you cross the line. With that high-cut helmet, carefully designed to allow your professionally coiffed hair to flow freely, you have tried to hijack a moment that you can't even begin to understand. You decided that an event that has for years been intended to call attention to our POWs, MIAs, would make a really cool photo op, as well as a great kickoff for your next get-rich scheme. Well, Sari, you picked my war this time. I had several buddies, two of whom who died within a couple of meters of me, and you zoomed right past their names on the wall today, winked and smiled all the way. You weren't invited. You weren't welcome, but when has that ever stopped you? Did you make a few extra bucks for your pack? If so, I hope it helps you sleep tonight because you see, Sarah, my buddies have been sleeping for 40 years. And if they knew that a two-bit grifter like you would one day be making money off of their sacrifice, they might not be resting as easily as I hope they are tonight. He says, I'm a Christian, Sarah, and I don't say this lightly, but GDU, Sarah Palin. And, you know, you think about this, and, you know, again, I always worry about that. I always worry about what the image is going to be, that she ran to the front of the line. She took the thunder away from the people who were there, took the moment, the reason, and for what?
And a lot of these are Vietnam veterans, and sad the way they were treated. I mean, it was a horrible war. It divided this country. I was young when I went through it, just out of high school. And I remember those were tough, tough times. And this country was in turmoil. And when some of those soldiers came back, it wasn't their fault. They were asked to fight and die for the country. They did that. And when they came back, there was a lot of animosity and hate directed towards them. And I think that was just basically unjust.
But the good thing about all this is, again, she's hiding her itinerary. So even the people that support her are going to be very angry when she doesn't show up and flash her pearly whites and wink and say, you betcha. Amazing stuff. Although, you know, for those of you who love George Bush, Wednesday, tomorrow, I guess, the Georgester will be in the Lancaster County area. He's going to be the keynote speaker at the Lancaster Chamber of Commerce and Industries 139th dinner. I wonder what that's costing the good folks, the good business folks who are trying to break down unemployment in this state, trying to destroy that. And the last thing I want to talk about before we go, Adam Kokesh, a guy we've had on this program in the past, and one of the more outspoken people against the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, he was arrested evidently for dancing in the Jefferson Memorial on Saturday. And looking at the video, in not a way I would want a veteran treated in this country. It's just a sad, sad day. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the labor campaign for single-payer health care prepares to meet in Washington, D.C. June 3rd through the 5th, they have a shining example of what's possible when it comes to single-payer health care in the U.S. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin has signed into law legislation that will make Vermont the home of America's first single-payer health care system. A financing package must still be passed by Vermont's legislature, and there are federal waivers required. But a strong grassroots coalition in Vermont, led by labor, supports single-payer and will keep fighting to bring it to fruition. Governor Shumlin says that Vermont's single-payer system treats health care as a right and not a privilege. At its June meeting in Washington, Labor's Campaign for Single-Payer National Meeting will celebrate the Vermont victory and discuss its strategic significance in the national fight for single-payer. Postal workers in Canada could soon be walking the picket lines instead of their routes, Jesse Russell reports.
Canadians could stop receiving mail as soon as Friday. The Canadian Union of Postal Workers notified Canada Post that if an agreement isn't reached by 11:59 p.m. on Thursday, the 48,000 postal employees represented by the union would be walking off the job. The contract for the workers expired on January 31st, and on May 25th, a nearly unanimous vote by members gave the union the authority to call a strike. The Postal Service has offered a four-year wage deal that shows an increase of 1.9% over the first 3 years and 2% in the fourth year. The union is seeking a wage increase of 3.3% the first year and 2.75% in the remaining 3 years. If a strike does occur, the union and Canada Post have agreed that certain types of mail will continue to be delivered, such as federal pensions.
If you're out of work and are willing to pack up and move, you might want to consider North Dakota. The state has 17,000 job openings and the lowest unemployment rate in the country, and the jobs available typically pay a decent wage. The state is currently in need of engineers, healthcare experts, the tech savvy, electricians, and more. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alert.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Yeah, I got an interesting email during the break. Earlier this afternoon, I had an appearance on Fox Business Channel's, I forget what the show is called, American Nighttime Scoreboard or something like this. And I was, you know, debating some guy from the Cato Institute, and I got an email evidently from one of the loyal right-wingers who thought it necessary to say that, here's what he said. I would suggest you keep your small-town hick views off of Nation TV. Fox News made you look like a country bumpkin. I have never been called a country bumpkin. I am so thrilled. He said, you are in way over your head. Keep doing your disservice to rural Pennsylvania hayseeds like yourself. And again, you know, you go, where do you find someone like this nitwit to even... Here's the bottom line. President Obama gave a loan to the auto industry. Saved millions of jobs in this country. The auto industry is hiring people back, tens of thousands of jobs as we speak, are being created. Economies are rising. We're seeing economic activity. Small business opportunity is there to feed these communities that are now back to thriving, going from unemployment status to employed status, having disposable income. All the good things that we've been talking about on the program are beginning to happen. With jobs, you begin to see economic activity grow. And that's what we're seeing. And the right, they're losing their mind because they don't know how to respond. They are so adamantly opposed to anything having to do with government that when something goes against their ethos, they have nothing else to do but to attack. And this guy thinks that calling me a country bumpkin is somehow of an attack on my person. Actually, I got to be honest. I think it's pretty funny.
That's pretty funny.
But at the end of the day, the sad reality is we've got folks like this guy in this country who cannot look at a situation logically and say, you know what? The president and our government did a smart thing. They targeted investment to help grow jobs and grow the economy. They had vision for the future. It was smart policy. It was a win-win for everyone. The free market is now, you know, working. We're creating jobs. What I think most people forget, and this is one of the points I tried to make on this, on the show I was on, is that this massive free fall, after the Bush collapse of employment really, you know, spanned the country. We're losing several hundred thousand jobs a month. And the auto industry, you know, my grandfather always said, you know, as GM goes, the country goes. Had the country gone, had GM gone bankrupt, the country could have gone with it. It's not just that you would have lost those three companies or those two companies, because Ford would have gone with GM and Chrysler. Had GM and Chrysler gone down, Ford would have gone with them, because you would have lost all of those smaller feeder producers in those areas. What I find just remarkable is that you had congressmen and senators in this country from the southern states, from Alabama, from Tennessee, who were saying, let them fail. Just let them go. Because, you know, as Zach Womb said, you know, Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee, a right-to-work state with lower wages and lower benefits. And I asked the question, is that the country we want? And I asked my friend Tom, who sent me this very pleasant email. And thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. I always love positive feedback. Because anybody who's watching Fox Business, if they heard what I said and they applauded it, I would worry. Because the Fox listeners are basically brainwashed to believe in this free market that has never existed and is never going to exist. This invisible man who's pushing the people around, never going to happen. And it has never happened, but it's their blind faith ideology. It's this belief in something that has never been, that amuses me. And what I couldn't get a response out of, and, you know, they were all upset that, well, you know, they gave money to Chrysler and to General Motors. And I asked the question, well, what about the $1 billion that the state of Tennessee gave to Volkswagen? What about the hundreds of millions of dollars that Alabama gave to Mercedes-Benz? What about the hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies and tax abatements and energy and guaranteed purchases that we gave to these foreign car companies that we refused to give to American companies? What about that? And they had no answer for it other than, well, we're against that. And what's nice, it's nice to live in there, like the Cato Institute. It's nice to live in that ivory tower. It's nice to be in a place where you can deal with perfect models. But in the real world, where communities are at stake and thousands of people, their livelihoods depend on smart people doing smart things, I just find it remarkable, absolutely remarkable, that we have people in this country who think that the auto bailout, the loans that we gave to those auto companies is a bad thing. And it's this blind faith in the quote-unquote free markets that is, again, it doesn't exist, that just, I find it really remarkable.
Well, there's another just small factor, and I say that facetiously. The auto industry in this country made up about 1/7 of the economy, 1/7. And at that time, the economy was precarious, but I think you're right. I think if the auto industry goes down, we go into another depression.
And they're all upset that, you know, they're all just nuts. Well, you know, those union workers made out. And what they forget to say to anyone is that there were massive concessions that the union workers voluntarily entered into. And that's, you know, again, the beauty of collective bargaining. Now, look, the loans that we gave to Chrysler and GM, those weren't handouts. Those were hand-ups. Those were, here's a little help. We're going to help you get back on your feet. I think it's smart policy. I didn't hear anybody complaining about the more money that we gave to the top 2% of this country after the November election, when the Republicans were holding us hostage to give the very wealthy those Bush tax handouts. Didn't hear many people complaining about that. But again, it all depends on your point of view, I guess. When you're looking at a situation and your vantage point is up in the ivory tower, down on everybody else, it's easy to say, let the free market work. But when you're one of those people who get your hands bloody and dirty, and at the end of the day your back aches and your hips are worn out, and you've given everything you can give to these companies, to have them say, well, you know, sorry, there's the door. I'm not with you on this. And I'm sure I'm going to be getting a bunch of emails from the radicals over off the Fox News network, and I welcome that because it's this kind of conversation that has to happen. The question I do have, and it does bring up an interesting situation. When you look at the automakers in the Northeast, when you look at the Ford and GM and Chrysler, who are largely unionized, they pay their workers a reasonable wage, even though, you know, they love to say, well, it's $1,000 an hour those automakers work. When really you're talking about mostly legacy benefits, and they love throwing that out there. The fact that retirees get health care, they love to add those in just to inflate the numbers. It's disingenuous, but that's what they do. Now you go down the line and you go down to Tennessee or Alabama, where you have these companies who have come in, and they are exploiting our law. They're exploiting the fact that you can go to Tennessee and pay someone $10 an hour or $11 an hour, and they are just thrilled as can be. And they're willing to take from the North and take from someone else because there is that competitive disadvantage. And again, the question I have, what kind of an economy do we want? Do we want one where we have the lowest wages, where we have the lowest benefits, where nobody has a pension, where the working class of this country toils as they did in the 1880s and 1890s? And there are some who would say, yeah, that's how it should be. They could work their way up. And I went on this show because, you know, I wanted the working person to have a voice. The fact is that this policy worked. And your hatred of Obama and your hatred of this administration, set that aside. This was smart policy moving us back in the direction of creating jobs. It's that simple. And the Republicans don't know how to handle it because in November they ran on jobs. They were going to be the party of the paycheck, not the unemployment check. Well, guess what? Guess what? Obama has begun to create jobs, as he told you it would happen, in the exact way it would happen. Slowly, over time, we will dig out of this massive hole that the free market put us into, that the Bush regime put us into. Understand, Glass-Steagall had just been thrown out in the last year of Clinton's term. So you're talking about 8 years of the Bush administration to collapse this country. 8 years. That's it. That is remarkable. And yet, I guess I'm just not seeing the anger and the frustration that I think we should be seeing at Wall Street. And the guy on Fox Business, you would have loved it, the guy on Fox Business today, he goes, well, you know, their stock price is down. And I'm like, you know, what do I care about their stock price? I want to know if people are working. I want to know whether people are back to work. The Lordstown plant, on my way back home to Cleveland, for the first time in 10 years, I've seen the parking lot almost full. They're pumping a car out every minute. And that community is thriving. People are starting small businesses. People are growing, and the employers are moving to the area to be part of that. I'm sorry. You may think I'm nuts. That's okay, though, because this is working. And this is the kind of smart investment we need.
It just is. And I wish we'd have done more of it. I wish we would have taken that money that we gave away during the Recovery Act to the wealthy in the way of more tax cuts, and the money that we gave away during the hostage phase of the lame duck this past November, so that the investor class could have more, and taken that money and said, you know what, our infrastructure sucks. Our infrastructure is failing. Chunks of concrete are falling off of bridges. We should be rebuilding that. We should do like the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, and build something. Because you know, here's the reality, and this is the point I didn't get in. If you're a country that doesn't build anything, you're a country that doesn't exist. And these people who somehow feel that, hey, Fox News said that this is a bad thing, I'm going to buy it, you're nuts. I'm going to take a break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
Drowning in crafted lies. Save the USA and resume those ties as mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And you thought you had it bad? Sure, bucko, your income might have been knocked down while your outgo keeps going up. And it's true that neither the corporate bosses nor political big shots give working folks any respect these days. But at least you're not suffering like Charles Koch. Wait till you hear his tale of woe. Having inherited and expanded his father's industrial empire, this poor guy is now a billionaire 21 times over, as is his brother David. But in a recent op-ed piece, Charles wails that everyone from, quote, the White House to fringe bloggers is assailing the Koch boys. We are now being vilified, mischaracterized, and threatened, he exclaims. Why are they being subjected to such an outrageous assault? Because, he writes, my brother David and I have long supported the principles that help societies prosper. Also, he adds, we believe economic freedom is essential for improving the well-being of society as a whole. So, you see, the billionaire bros are nobly standing for the social good. Therefore, they are suffering the slings and arrows of socialistic political activists who, he claims, hate freedom and prosperity. Good grief, what a crock of overcooked Koch narcissism. The economic freedom Charles and David seek is solely for corporatist elites like them. They're spending untold millions of dollars on far right-wing front groups, candidates, and lobbyists to take away the freedom of workers to organize unions and bargain on pay and benefits. They're pushing to take away the power of communities to free themselves from industrial polluters like Koch Industries. Plus, they're trying to shut down Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Head Start, and other public programs that free people from poverty and illness. This is Jim Hightower saying, when billionaires like Charles and David start claiming that they are our society's savior, grab your wallet and democratic freedoms and get your butt to the barricades. Pronto!
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, I know that somewhere down inside they're just feeling small and scared, and they need to know that someone out there cares. Have you heard of Republicans today? Have you tried to spread your love to those who love the NRA? Though they might be quite reluctant, cause they'll wonder if you're gay.
Somebody should hug him anyway. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails, so I look forward to that. Our stat of the day comes from the folks over at the Too Much Online blog. The estates left behind by America's super rich, those fortunes worth over $20 million, they're going to pay on average $3.8 million each less in estate tax in 2011 and 2012, thanks to the hostage situation in the lame duck session last November. and December, where the Republicans said, you know what, we're not going to help those unemployed people. We're going to let them starve if our investor class folks don't get the little extra cheese on their Whopper. And so we, you know, Democrats did what they did, and they caved on it and gave, you know, tens of billions of dollars away to the upper crust so we could have a few crumbs for the folks who've been unemployed for some time. And according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities last week, the December trim of the estate tax will save the wealthiest 0.25% of all estates about $23 billion. In 2011 and 2012, $23 billion. And I didn't hear the right go crazy about the $23 billion that we handed out to the investor class. And not even to their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Didn't hear anything about that. But yet we give loans to a long-standing American corporation who has been employing tens of thousands of American workers who spend that money in their local communities and support small business, that somehow is the end of civilization as we know it. Just amazing stuff. And, you know, again, I go back to this whole beggar thy neighbor economics. And I can't get Carlisle Tire and Wheel out of my head. Here was a company 93 years in the community. The state of Tennessee dangled $34 million in front of their face, and they ran as fast as they could down there. And somehow that $34 million, somehow that's not taxpayer money. So I'm trying to figure that one out myself. How giving loans to GM and to Chrysler, that's bad, but giving massive handouts to companies that are profitable, and Carlisle Tire and Wheel has been profitable, but giving them more, somehow that's good. That's the free market in action. And look, you know, with my conservative friends, there's a lot you and I will agree on in theory. When we sit down and we look at our perfect models and we write things down on paper and we diagram things where we can account for every variable and we can account for everything that's going to happen in the perfect little model world, in that ivory think tank world, we can have these little beautiful models, these beautiful creations of perfection and utopia. But the reality is, folks, we live in the real world, where people are really hungry and communities are really suffering. And I know from the vantage point up there, you know, in the Ivory Castle there at Fox News and the Cato Institute and Heritage and American Enterprise and all of those other right-wing tinky tanks, the vantage point down on the rest of us is not that important to them. It's their blind faith ideology that's important. You know what's important to me? The fact that And you sit and you go, really? We're going to, again, allow this to continue to happen? According to the Boston Consulting Group report, 1% of the households on this planet, 1%, have 39% of the wealth. They have pocketed 39% of all of the wealth of this planet, 1% of the people. And the economic collapse that the Bush administration caused and this bizarre free market ideology has caused, this massive greed is good economy has caused, this massive collapse has only made that gulf larger. And what I find interesting is, that, you know, there are 5,222 millionaires created in the United States, which is an increase from the previous year of 1%. But here's the thing. Here in this country, we've got 5,000, just over 5,000 people who are in that upper strata, who control a greater amount of wealth than the bottom 60% of people in this country. Now, I can understand one dictator in Ethiopia controlling the wealth of the vast majority of the people. I can get that because we believe, well, those are dictators and those poor people are. But in this country, the wealthiest country on the planet, to have that kind of a massive gulf between those who have and those who don't, to me is amazing. And what I credit it to people like Fox News, I credit it to the Limbaughs and the Hannitys because they're masters. They're masters of manipulation. I was behind a guy in traffic today who was driving a foreign, little foreign box car, you know, one of those little Hyundais or whatever. You know, it's a little older, beaten up, you know, whatever, with a pizza delivery bubble on the top of his car. And the guy's about my age, in his early 40s. With a bumper sticker on the back that had the Obama symbol of socialism, trickle-up poverty. And I'm going, here's a guy who probably spends all day long listening to right-wing drivel and has bought into it. He's looking at his life going, yeah, the reason my life sucks and I'm driving this car is because the socialists are taking over and they're giving subsidies to oil companies. Wait a minute, I didn't say that. They're giving poor people unemployment, or they've got welfare, or they've got health insurance programs to help the least among us. They never point where the real problems are, which is the corporate socialism. I wish I would see a bumper sticker talking about that. But this bothers me, Jake, the fact that, you know, 1% of the globe controls 39% of the wealth. That's amazing to me.
Look at the historical perspective, and I know sometimes maybe we're accused of being alarmists, but if you look at all the great civilizations in the history of the world, most of them weren't defeated from their enemies, a direct assault and invasion. They deteriorated from within. And when you have a continual increasing amount of wealth controlled by fewer and fewer people, and wealth isn't just wealth. That means power, that means control, that means direction that we're going. When you have fewer people having that ability and taking away from the democratic process, that does not bode well for our democracy. And could, unless we do something about it long term, it could lead to the very destruction of our society, and I hope that never happens. But we need to change the direction of this country, without question.
And, you know, I go back to this auto thing, which I think is important to understand. If you're no longer creating things, you're no longer creating wealth, you're no longer adding value to things, I don't know how you can survive. Now, look, am I thrilled that Fiat is the one who's benefiting from Chrysler coming out of this? Not so much. I'm not fond of the foreign car companies making that big of a profit. But at the end of the day, what you're talking about in this scenario is you're talking about all the other American companies that would have faltered along with Chrysler, would have faltered along with GM, and taken Ford with them. And that was really, I think, the thought. And I truly believe the Zach Womps of the world, who blatantly came out and said, let them fail. You know, Volkswagen invested in Tennessee, a right-to-work state with less wages and less benefits. I truly believe that they did the calculus and said, you know what, we're going to have a lot more political capital if Michigan and Ohio and Illinois, if those auto companies in those states go out of business and all of the feeder jobs that go with it go out of business, all that work will move down to the Volkswagens and the Mercedes and the Hyundais that are down in the South. I truly believe they did the political calculus and said it would be good for them, it would be good for their states, if the other part of the country lost. And I asked the question, are we Americans or are we people from Tennessee or people from Ohio? That's the question I keep fighting with. And where do we end up? Do we end up all working for minimum wage? Do we become a minimum wage nation? Because if you don't think that this affects you, when that working class guy gets knocked down a notch, everybody comes with him. And the wealth continues to grow apart. And we see, as I just said, 39% of all the wealth in this world controlled by 1% of the people.
Well, Zach Wong is wrong on several counts. First of all, that was needed. That was needed to really keep our country from falling into what many economists predict would have been the second Great Depression. But beyond that, when you talk to people in Congress and you get a true sense of what happened behind the scenes, many of them realized we needed a lot more money than what was put into the original proposal. Some of them feel that we should have doubled the money, and the reason that wasn't doubled wasn't economic reasons. Economically, we needed it. It was political. They felt that they couldn't get it couldn't get it through Congress, and they would risk reprisals, you know, at the ballot box. But unfortunately, enough Democrats didn't have enough backbone. They had the opportunity and should have.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You got a comment on this question, something on your mind? We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
You've reached Jenny in the accounts receivable department of Dentsply International. I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as I'm available.
Jenny was in constant pain and missing too much work.
I wasn't reliable. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't be what I wanted to be. I knew that I could do my job better. I knew that I could be a better mom. I could be a better wife. But my body wasn't letting me.
Fortunately, Jenny's employer has Capital Blue Cross. And Capital gave Jenny a whole set of services called Better Health Works. Jenny filled out a profile, got online coaching, and called a nurse line.
She talked me out of a very dark time because I didn't know what else to do. Since I had my surgery, now I can give my employer and my family 110% of me.
Capital's Amy Montgomery is happy that Jenny is happy.
It feels great that Capital Blue Cross was able to help Jenny this way. We really believe in what we do, and I think that that's one of the things that makes us successful. I think it's a perfect example of when you care more, you do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
At PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. A really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life to get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Well, the hostage takers are at it again. The radical right wing, you know, doing what they do best, which is, you know, their scorched earth mentality of holding the country hostage. And we've been talking about this for the last week. Again, you've got Orrin Hatch out there, saying that, well, you know, we just can't afford to help those workers. We just can't afford to help those who are going to be displaced, by these three insane trade schemes. The Colombia, the South Korea, and the Panama trade agreements. We just can't afford to help those people. Sorry. You know, it's gonna be tough, but we're broke. But here, President Obama, we're not going to approve your Commerce Secretary unless you send us these trade agreements. Again, another hostage situation. And what I find really amusing is on all sides of this, and as you know, I am not a big fan of these free trade agreements because I think they're bad policy all the way around. Because one, there's nothing free about them. The only thing that's free is we're freely trading good-paying jobs for not-so-cheap products anymore. When we still had decent employment, we still had a decent manufacturing base in the country, and we could afford to lose a portion. Hey, it was great. We're getting these products. We're making decent wages. But increasingly, we're seeing the U.S. become a minimum wage nation, where we're working for considerably less than we were a generation ago. And again, when they're talking about these trade schemes, the administration came out and said, we're going to create jobs. They're going to create some jobs. But how many is it going to cost? And at the end of the day, what happens to those folks? What happens to the people who lose their jobs? And they're talking about this trade adjustment assistance, which I think is vital. When you lose your industry, and this isn't just a handful of jobs, these are industries. You stop and think about the clothing manufacturers. Gone. There may be a handful of niche companies still left, but the vast majority of the clothing in this country, I take my kids clothes shopping with a globe because it's a good geography lesson, because very, very, almost nothing is made here anymore. It's made all over the third world. So it's at least a good geography lesson, if nothing else. And increasingly, it's becoming everything that we consume, most of it from China. And that's what gets me about, you know, these folks who believe in the free market. Well, we believe in the free market. At the end of the day, China produces everything, and we either are willing to work for nothing and in slave conditions to compete, or we lose, as we have been doing since permanent and normal trade relations. Since we began, we threw the doors wide open and said, go ahead, American companies, run over there and bring your stuff back here. It's just plain nuts. Just plain nuts. And I hope that we, and this is where I find it interesting. I'm waiting for the Tea Party response to this, because the Tea Twizzlers, they should be on board with us to say no more of these insane trade schemes.
And that's one thing that's disappointed me. I even have some, believe it or not, Rick, I have some Republican friends who said that, you know, they're disappointed in them because it appears that some of them turned into corporatists. And they're siding with the corporate interests in this country when initially they touted themselves as this public reaction to too much spending in the country. But yet, when a lot of them have gone to Washington, their voting record really says something else, and they all too often have sided with the corporate interests.
And you know what I find interesting? And this is one of those things that you just have to scratch your head over and wonder where the rationale is. I mean, the Tea Party people, they ran on America first, you know, throw the flag up. And then they get into office, and then they kind of like the job. And now it's do what I got to do to stay here. You know, never mind that stuff over there. We'll do enough to keep raising money. Make those corporations happy. And to be honest, for the people who watch Fox or watch Fox News or any of those other stations, their blind faith ideology in what they're being fed and their absolute hatred of working people organizations, of unions, of associations, is amazing to me. And I can understand why after listening to a Fox program or being, you know, just bombarded with it by the radical right, that you would then say that these, especially Colombia, that the Colombia Free Trade Agreement is a good idea because they're business friendly. They take those union people up in planes and they throw them out, or they pull them off of buses and they shoot them in the head like it should be here. And I'm increasingly concerned that as a nation, we've lost faith in each other. Because at the end of the day, unions are about people. They're about you and me, Jake, and you and all of us coming together and saying, you know what, we want to have a better life. We want to succeed and move forward. Instead of this idea that every job site is a futile situation. Every job site is a king and serf situation where the king is the boss and everybody else is at his mercy. I'm increasingly concerned about the direction. There's been this, and labor hasn't, unions haven't done a very good job of getting out and telling their story, saying, look at the 1880s, 1890s, look at the despair and the poverty and the destitution, look at how we came out of the Great Depression, and look at the wealth that we created in a middle class. From the beginning of the time of this country, the economy was shaped in a pyramid. A handful of people had all the money, and as you moved down the pyramid, you got poorer and poorer and poorer. What unions did is created a diamond-shaped economy, where you had a few rich people at the top, you had some poor people at the bottom, but the vast majority of people were there in that nice, happy middle, where people could buy homes and people could buy cars, and you had an economy that was moving forward. Why? Because a lot of this stuff was being built here. So when you bought that television that was made in Ohio, or you bought that washing machine that was built in Illinois, or if you bought those toys that were built in Massachusetts, if you built these products, you were creating jobs for your neighbors. Now we've got this consumer first, last, and only mentality that I just want the best deal for me and screw everybody else. It's all about me. Hooray for me. When in the end, what you're doing is you're not only screwing your neighbor, but yourself eventually. Because the job that you may eventually be saving may, in fact, be your own. And too often, what we've seen, and you know, when I worked in the freight industry, it used to drive me nuts when people would go and ship packages and ship things with non-union carriers and then wonder why they weren't working. You go, well, hey, dum-dum, you work in the freight business. You just sent a package with a different carrier because you saved 6 cents. It made no sense. And this makes no sense. It makes no sense to me. And if someone could explain it, I would love to hear the rationale because I'm not getting it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you've got a rationale for it, because I'm not getting it from the right. I've got a bunch of very angry, misspelled, poorly written emails, but I haven't gotten much in the way of rational. I've gotten a lot of finger pointing. The fact that somebody's going to actually stand up and fight for working people has some enraged, because it's not what you hear. You never hear people standing up for the underclass, which is why, you know, you look at this House Bill 916 that Scott Perry was trying to ram through. A horrible, just devastating bill to the people who are on unemployment right now. He's taking his thumps right now, because the AFL-CIO here in Pennsylvania, they ran a campaign against him. Said, look what this guy's trying to do to you people in his district, and he's freaked out about it. And you know the other part of this? Do you know how many non-union people are unemployed? The vast majority. So when the vast majority sees an organization like the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO saying, you know what, we're going to stand up for those unemployed people, union, non-union, doesn't matter, we're going to stand up and fight for them, that image that the right has been spending billions of dollars to create changes. And that, my friend, is what needs to happen more. Look, the investor class, the CEO class, they've got their lobbyists. They've got their hired guns. They've got their think tank ideologues. They've got their TV shows like the one I was on. At the end, working folks like you and me, we don't have a voice. There's no champion of the underclass. There's no champion of the guy who gets his knuckles bloody working on a car. There's no champion of the people who go home and have to shower at the end of the day. There's just not. That's why we're here. We're right back after this.
Right wing.
Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the labor campaign for single-payer health care prepares to meet in Washington, D.C. June 3rd through the 5th, they have a shining example of what's possible when it comes to single-payer health care in the U.S. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin has signed into law legislation that will make Vermont the home of America's first single-payer health care system. A financing package must still be passed by Vermont's legislature, and there are federal waivers required. But a strong grassroots coalition in Vermont, led by labor, supports single-payer and will keep fighting to bring it to fruition. Governor Shumlin says that Vermont's single-payer system treats health care as a right and not a privilege. At its June meeting in Washington, Labor's Campaign for Single-Payer National Meeting will celebrate the Vermont victory and discuss its strategic significance in the national fight for single-payer. Postal workers in Canada could soon be walking the picket lines instead of their routes, Jesse Russell reports.
Canadians could stop receiving mail as soon as Friday. The Canadian Union of Postal Workers notified Canada Post that if an agreement isn't reached by 11:59 p.m. on Thursday, the 48,000 postal employees represented by the union would be walking off the job. The contract for the workers expired on January 31st, and on May 25th, a nearly unanimous vote by members gave the union the authority to call a strike. The Postal Service has offered a four-year wage deal that shows an increase of 1.9% over the first 3 years and 2% in the fourth year. The union is seeking a wage increase of 3.3% the first year and 2.75% in the remaining 3 years. If a strike does occur, the union and Canada Post have agreed that certain types of mail will continue to be delivered, such as federal pensions.
If you're out of work and are willing to pack up and move, you might want to consider North Dakota. The state has 17,000 job openings and the lowest unemployment rate in the country. And the jobs available typically pay a decent wage. The state is currently in need of engineers, healthcare experts, the tech savvy, electricians, and more. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer them all personally, and look forward to, especially the crazy ones. I've been getting some really nice crazy ones this evening since the appearance on Fox Business News or Fox News Business or one of those stations way down on the dial, somewhere in the 1,000 range. I'm sure the six people that watch, you know, they're the ones who emailed me. But it was fun. It was one of those moments where you go, hey, you know, let's take on a right winger and have a little conversation.
Did Bubba sign his email?
they signed their email.
Okay. You know,
you got to give him credit for that. Anyway, from the Borowitz Report, I love Andy Borowitz. I think he's hysterical. He writes, presenting what he called a revolutionary plan to slash the nation's mountain of debt. Representative Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, today proposed eliminating the Social Security program in its entirety and replacing it with Groupons. Yep, we're going to be replacing it with Groupons. He says instead of waiting each month for a check from Social Security, America's elderly will receive valuable Groupons for everything they need, from ramen noodles to cat food to caskets. All right there, Mr. Ryan said in an appearance on Fox News, adding that Groupons would also help provide for the elderly's medical needs. The congressman illustrated his point by holding up a Groupon offer for 30% off open heart surgery in Cincinnati. Moving on from Social Security, Mr. Ryan also proposed replacing Medicare with a new program in which seniors are shot by predator drones. Very, very nice. Additionally, Mr. Ryan said in his new budget, so-called friends with benefits would lose their benefits. So no more friends with benefits. If they're really friends, they should be satisfied with when the evening ends with a voucher. Speaker of the House John Boehner, appearing alongside Representative Ryan, offered these words of praise for the Wisconsin congressman, saying, "Preachers like Harold Camping go around predicting the end of the world, but it's guys like Paul Ryan who do the hard work that makes it happen." You gotta love that. And that is our Borowitz report. And to be honest, you know, you got to give the guy credit. He is nuts. But he has his view of what the country should be. And it's what the Fox News people are pushing. It's what the radical right agenda is. This idea that, you know, we're all, you know, the Ayn Rand vision, of which most people I've talked to who profess this vision of Ayn Rand have never read her books. I mean, that to me is the most comical part of all of this. I was talking to somebody the other day who couldn't name one of the titles of the books. Now, I have started to read a couple of them at points in my life and got it, you know, like 20, 30, 50 pages in and said, no, I'm not going to waste a portion of my life to continue into this because it's just nuts. But there's a whole world of thought that goes into what this woman had to say. And to be honest, coming from where she came from, with her very narrow view of the world, I can understand where you're angry, you're bitter. I get it. I kind of get it. But the reality is, to follow that is a race to the bottom.
She sounds a bit psychotic, Rick.
She was psychotic. But anyway, you know, these are the people who are pushing policy. And I look at someone like Rick Santorum, who thinks, you know, that extending unemployment benefits are a bad thing, and that we have created too big of a social safety net, according to him. Now, understand, had we not the meager, tattered social safety net that we currently have, this country would be in the throes of a Great Depression. We would be solidly right there. But here again, you know, you got Santorum, who's running for president, out there saying, too big of a net. We absolutely need to have, you know, more people unemployed, more people desperate. We need that desperation class. And what I do agree with, and I've said this a number of times, you know, we have a structural unemployment problem. There aren't enough jobs. There just aren't. So what you have to do in that situation is you have to create some jobs, like we did during the Great Depression, where you weren't handing out unemployment often. 99 weeks to me seems a bit excessive, and I do agree with the right on that. It's a bit excessive. My vision, and you could argue with me, is 26 weeks. If you can't find a job in that time, somebody should find you a job. Because there are therapeutic qualities to work. There are self-esteem issues. There are family issues. The government should come out and say, you know what? We are going to be the employer of last resorts. There's so much work that needs to be done. So instead of giving you health care, giving you the unemployment, we're going to give you about $100 more with some health care and make sure that your family's okay. But you're going to go to work. And you're going to, you know, paint granny's house down the street, or you're going to clean somebody's yard, or you're going to do any of the millions of things that are not being done today. To me, it sounds like a great idea. But the right would fight you vehemently. Fight you vehemently. What they want to do is they want to demagogue. They want to put these people down. They want to vilify. And you look at what's going on in Florida right now. They want to require anyone who gets welfare to take a drug test. I'm like, who's going to pay for that? And what special interest got that contract? And what brother-in-law ended up with the contract to test the drug, the urine? That's what I want to know. So under the law there in Florida, if you're collecting TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, you're going to have to take a drug test.
And I'm assuming if you fail it, you don't get the money.
No, you don't get anything. And even worse yet, you don't get rehab. There's nothing. So If someone is on drugs, you know, I want them to get help. I think it's a disease. But again, you know, it's more about punishment. It's more about that iron fist. It's more about creating desperation. because if we have desperate people, we can give them lower wages.
Does that include marijuana, right?
It includes all the drugs.
Well, the reason I asked that, I mean, let's be honest, there's a lot of people who smoke it at home in their house in the evening, and they go to work the next day. Is that still in their bud system? Of course it is.
Well, it's up for a couple of weeks, but that's not the issue.
Well, but according to what you said, if they're tested, found positive, they lose their unemployment. My point was...
No, this is TANF. This is different than unemployment.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Now I'm lost. But at the end of this, this is where a lot of areas want to go. And here in Pennsylvania, we're probably going to hear the same kind of a thing pop up. We're going to eventually hear this again because you got the people like Daryl Metcalf in this state who are basically insane and want to push for this stuff. And now look, you know, I don't want people collecting welfare, sitting at home, getting high all day long. I understand it. I understand desperation. I understand being in poverty. You know, I grew up in a housing project. I saw all of the societal ills. And I saw people trying to drown their sorrows and drown their failures and whatever they could find. At the end of the day, though, for me, these kind of programs have to be jobs programs. Because, again, jobs, and this is where the Republicans, this is where they won the American vote last November. They won the vote by saying, we are going to create jobs. In fact, I've got their pledge. Got their pledge right here on my table. The big pledge was all about jobs, 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 jobs. They must have cut and pasted the jobs angle several times in their 48-page manifesto with 27 pages worth of pictures of white smiling people with big happy smiles on their face. But have they done that? And I look again at the auto industry that is now creating tens of thousands of jobs. And they don't know how to react. It's the same thing with bin Laden. The right has just completely blown my mind. For years, it was all about killing bin Laden. That's why we're in Afghanistan. We're going to kill bin Laden. Finally, Obama kills bin Laden. And they're in attack mode. They want to attack the guy. They want to give credit to Bush. And Bush was sitting at a baseball game eating a hot dog. I'm going, at some point, don't we have to be rational? And I guess the answer is no. And what saddens me is we are so polar in our beliefs. You know, had Bush killed bin Laden, I would have given him credit for that. Had Bush done something right, would have given him credit for that. The sad reality is he caused pain and misery across this country. And every time I see one of those bumper stickers saying, miss me yet? I say, no, I don't. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. But back to this this Santorum thing. And Santorum's polling way, way down. I mean, again, I think he's just looking for a job. You know, he's thrown his name out there so he can put it behind his as a title. Hey, yeah, it's on my resume. I ran for president. Didn't have a snowball's chance, but I ran. Give me a job. Give me one of those ivory tower think tank jobs. Again, you know, no chance of winning, but pushing the radical, really, really extreme view on issues that, I'm sorry, I don't think are all that important. I wish we could talk about how to create an economy that works for everyone. I wish we could talk about a sane national defense policy. I wish we could talk about national health care that, you know, didn't have the government being the provider, but being the one who pays the bills and makes sure that everyone has access to it. I don't care if it's a private system. As long as everyone has it from cradle to grave. And there's no incentive for an insurance company to push you off down the road like we have today. There's so many problems that we're just not talking about because we're so polarized. Because we want to beat up on the unions for standing up for their workers. We're going to want to beat up on GM and Chrysler because they were suffering because of a massive economic collapse. You know, all those companies that the radical right loves to defend, the Volkswagens and the Hyundais and the Mercedes and all of those down in Alabama and Tennessee, you don't think they got massive subsidies from the countries that their home is? Of course they did. Because those countries understand you need to keep these people afloat. Just blows the mind. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after that. We're in a fight to bring the middle class back, and we ain't even planning on losing.
listening to The Rick Smith Show.
And you thought you had it bad? Sure, Bucko. Your income might have been knocked down while your outgo keeps going up. And it's true that neither the corporate bosses nor political big shots give working folks any respect these days. But at least you're not suffering like Charles Koch. Wait till you hear his tale of woe. Having inherited and expanded his father's industrial empire, this poor guy is now a billionaire 21 times over, as is his brother David. But in a recent op-ed piece, Charles wails that everyone from, quote, the White House to fringe bloggers is assailing the Koch boys. We are now being vilified, mischaracterized, and threatened, he exclaims. Why are they being subjected to such an outrageous assault? Because, he writes, my brother David and I have long supported the principles that help societies prosper. Also, he adds, we believe economic freedom is essential for improving the well-being of society as a whole. So, you see, the billionaire bros are nobly standing for the social good. Therefore, they are suffering the slings and arrows of socialistic political activists who, he claims, hate freedom and prosperity. Good grief, what a crock of overcooked Koch narcissism. The economic freedom Charles and David seek is solely for corporatist elites like them. They're spending untold millions of dollars on far right-wing front groups, candidates, and lobbyists to take away the freedom of workers to organize unions and bargain on pay and benefits. They're pushing to take away the power of communities to free themselves from industrial polluters like Koch Industries. Plus, they're trying to shut down Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Head Start, and other public programs that free people from poverty and illness. This is Jim Hightower saying, when billionaires like Charles and David start claiming that they are our society's savior, grab your wallet and democratic freedoms and get your butt to the barricades. Pronto!
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
The Rick, who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Interesting story coming out of Philadelphia right now. The School Reform Commission tonight voted that they were going to push this idea that the unions down in Philadelphia, the school districts down there, they're going to have until, I guess it's June 30th, to agree to the cuts and to the proposal, or they were going to do away with the union. And my problem is when you give one side or the other this kind of power, it's not good for our society. It's not good for the nation. It's not good for education. But again, you know, you look at the massive cuts. The massive cuts that the folks here in Harrisburg, the Republicans in here in Harrisburg, are trying to ram through. And there's part of me that says, what do we expect school districts to do? If their funding is being slashed, what's going to happen? And I blame Tom Corbett for all of this because he's the guy at the top. He's the guy who put this insane budget out there, massive cuts to school districts. And again, we all know what's going to happen. At the end of the day, my property taxes are going to go up. Taxes will be increased one way or another. It's just a matter of who's taking them from me. And look, I'm in favor of having strong schools, good education, but what you're looking at here in this School Reform Commission down in Philadelphia, what they're talking about doing is ending full-day kindergarten, cutting most of the yellow bus transportation, firing about 3,800 employees, and a whole bunch of other really draconian things. And the only people pushing back are the parents. You know, I'm just not seeing what I had hoped to see when someone would propose destroying public education in the way that's going on. And you look at this SB1 stuff. SB1 is going to go down. not because the people who were against it are that skilled or are doing a good job of putting up a solid opposition. It's because the people, one, it's a bad idea, but two, the people who are pushing it did such a horrible job. I mean, the messaging behind it was horrible. I mean, some of the talk show hosts I've heard trying to articulate it have been just, and thankfully so, have been horrible at doing it. Telling people that parents get the money for their kids, so the kids, the people who homeschool their kids are going to get $9,000. You know, telling people that kids can go anywhere they want. In fact, we had a state senator on the program saying that once those kids get that voucher, they can go anywhere they want. Not true. And the idea that no school can turn a child away, another bizarre push out there, just plain dumb. But there's a lot of money in this. And I don't know if you saw this Stephen Pearlstein article in the Washington Post this weekend, which, again, I thought was eye-opening on a number of levels. He wrote Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch, understand. Rupert Murdoch announced that News Corp was getting into the business of developing digital learning content and systems in a big way. Now, when someone like Murdoch, who I do believe truly is an entrepreneur, I think he's a right-winger, but I think he knows what sells. I think he knows that dividing the idiot, that dividing this country and pandering to the idiot doofus base on the radical right is going to make him a lot of money. And he does it. He's a good entrepreneur. He's a smart business person. So when he looks at education in this country, he's seeing an entrepreneurial opportunity. He's seeing a place to make big profit. And of course he's going to get into it in a big way because there has been this push to privatize education. Now look, I'll be the first to admit, I'm not overly thrilled with the industrial method of education. I wasn't thrilled when I was a kid. I think that there were some things that could have been done better. And I'm open to change. I'm not open to privatization. I don't believe that putting my children's future in the hands of people who only want to profit from it is a good idea. And I'm definitely not someone who thinks that the computer is the answer. Call me analog, call me linear, whatever word you want to use. I'm not overly thrilled with the idea that you have computer. These cyber schools to me are just a bad idea. But I do think that there's opportunity for the computer era, for the cyber part of things to help, to be a partner with teachers, to be part of the curriculum, not be the curriculum. And what we're seeing is we're seeing this push, and it's really kind of disconcerting to me that we're seeing this push towards, well, we're gonna have, you know, like 1,000 students per teacher, and that teacher's gonna be really well paid, and you know, it's gonna all be video, you know, self-directed. And you know, I hear these commercials all the time where, you know what, hey, that's for you, little Johnny, and that's perfectly developed by computer XYZ for you and your future. Now, I do agree there are some things. I think the school day should be longer. I think the year should be longer. I've always been against grades. You know, the idea of first, second, third grade. I think kids should move along when they understand what they need to get to the next level. Always been a fan of that. But you do that in a way where the public interest is still served. And this idea, and Bill Gates is one of the people pushing, you know, this whole new way of doing things. I'm a little uneasy when you're talking about privatizing education and you're taking away what is part of the commons.
Well, there is, and don't underestimate the big money. Matt Brulé from the Commonwealth Foundation has been out there for months and months and months, just pounding. And, you know, he tries to articulate, but at the end of the day, it's pretty obvious. It's about privatization. It's also about hurting the unions. And those are the two messages that come clear every time he and individuals like him open their mouth. Now, how do they get their funding? The usual sources. The very wealthy. The Koch brothers, Scaife. Also the lady from
Betsy DeVos.
Betsy DeVos.
But you know, you look at somebody like Murdoch. And this goes back to something my grandfather always said. You know, the reality is a rich person's not going to take a buck out of their pocket unless they can make a profit on it. So, you know, if they're going to take a buck out, you better take two. You know, it's one of these scenarios where Murdoch sees the writing on the wall. And this whole development of content, this whole development of systems to replace teachers, because that's where we're going. We're going to a very digital type of education where you're going to cut down on, and people are going to buy it because, well, I won't have to pay high taxes. Because they've done such a nice job, really such a nice job of demonizing a tax structure that benefits the for society. And when we come back here, you know, again, I forgot we got a guest in the next segment. But at the end of this, you know, it comes down to this belief that, you know, people don't pay taxes. I'm frustrated here right now. Because I thought I had an open segment in the next one to get into this other part of it. Look, you know, when you're talking about education and this privatization scheme that's coming up, we are not going to, the working people of this state are not going to benefit from this. The people who have thrown millions of dollars into somebody like Anthony Williams, the people who have thrown millions of dollars into ad campaigns, and the people who have put millions of dollars into think tanks, they're going to want a return on their investment. That's basic free market capitalism. You want a return on your investment. They wouldn't be doing this without an end game. And the end game is simply that they believe there's massive profit at the end of the road. And they're going to spend whatever it takes to get this piece of the pie. They're going to take whatever, do whatever it takes to get this entrepreneurial, because they already set it up with the Bush era. When we passed No Child Left Behind, and we've talked about this before, this whole industrialization of testing, this whole setting up of proprietary information where the tests that used to be written on a piece of paper and photocopied for, you know, 2 cents a copy are now multi-million dollar you know, licensed tests. 2 + 2 = 4. That's proprietary information according to the new way of doing things. And we wonder why education's so expensive. But it's this whole, and we've bought into it. We've really bought into it. This whole we need to have strict measures, and we need tests, and we need all of these facts and figures and all of these things that, again, can be easily manipulated. And as we've seen in Washington, when the numbers don't go your way, just erase. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. When we come back, Wendy Rosen, founder of American Made Alliance, back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make headway in AFSCME!
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is... Everything's raisin, but the weight is... Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is... Everything's raisin, but the weight is...
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, you ever go to one of the, like a national park, or you go like to the you know, Penn State games, you ever go to a lot of these places, and they have souvenir shops or whatever, and you go to buy something, you pick something up, you turn it over, made in China. Everything seems to be made in China. All the little trinkets, the Statue of Liberty, made in China. And you ever wondered why? Because I always wonder, why can't we at least make that stuff here? Stuff that has our national monuments, stuff that have national figures, the little statue of Lincoln that I saw, made in China. Just kind of makes me angry. And not surprisingly, there are other people out there like me who are angry at this and have decided to do something, which is why I've asked Wendy Rosen. She's the founder of American Made Alliance, AmericanMadeAlliance.org, to come talk to us about just that. Wendy, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. I really appreciate the invitation.
You know, I look at this, and we've talked about on this program a number of times, it's frustrating. You go to a Penn State game, you go to a national monument, you go to any of these gift shops, there's nothing made even in the United States, let alone locally.
Well, and even when it is made in America, unfortunately, sometimes they're not properly marked. The Made in America things are under the counter, and the Chinese things are out front, and it becomes very confusing, and that was really obvious at our protest at the Grand Canyon this weekend. We spoke to hundreds and hundreds of tourists, and all of them were confused about what they were trying to buy in the national park shops and in the shops, of course, outside of the national parks. It's just confusing and deceptive.
Yeah, but do you think it's that people... You know, maybe are just too busy to look. You know, they assume. What is it that, you know, that we don't have this big hue and cry that, you know, all of these things seem to be this past weekend with Memorial Day. I spent a little time going around to, you know, people asking them to look where their flag was made. And most of them were shocked when they looked at it and said, it's made in China, the American flag.
Yes, I know. But there are things that we can do. And in fact, there was a law put on our books in the United States almost 80 years ago requiring every import for sale coming into the United States be marked indelibly and permanently with country of origin. And unfortunately, the enforcement of that law permits paper labels that say made in China. And if you're dealing with an unscrupulous manufacturer, distributor or retailer, or you're buying something secondhand at a yard sale, that sticker has probably been removed, and that's the biggest problem. All we need from President Obama is one simple executive order enforcing that law as it was written, and it doesn't cost us anything. You can only imagine if we decide to enforce the law and President Obama gives foreign manufacturers 6 months to change their ways, that all we need to do is turn around the first three container ships and send them back to where they came from if the items are not marked properly. The world will change, and it won't cost us anything, and we'll have a lot less deception in the marketplace.
You know,
this weekend at the Grand Canyon, I found so many souvenir gifts that were marked Tribal Art Look as the title of the company. And in four-point type, it says, not Indian-made. And if you're a foreign visitor coming from Japan or Germany, as so many of the Grand Canyon visitors are, you're duped all the time. You're going to be buying phony merchandise because you don't have a choice. And unfortunately, the way merchandise is sold in some of these big stores, it's the Walmart approach to selling. And there's a minimum wage employee behind a cash register, and there's no information, and the real tribal merchandise, which is almost the same price as the made in China merchandise in this case, is underneath the counter, and the Chinese stuff is out on the spinner racks where you can touch it and feel it and play with it and probably walk out the door with it.
And what's the sense of that? I mean, you know, I've seen situations much like that. What's the rationale?
I think that it's just easier. You know, we, in fact, noticed that every display at the National Park Store, the Bright Angel Store, which is the most popular and largest park store in the entire National Park system, that every rack was labeled with a big sign that said, items are imported unless otherwise marked, made in the USA. Well, as a shopper.
Boy, that's backwards.
Right.
That is so backwards.
That just does nothing but instill distrust immediately in everything you're buying.
Well, for me, Wendy, it means that I'm not buying anything.
That's exactly right. And people walked out of that shop and talked to us because we were right outside the door of the shop. And they said, why is it do they do this? Why is it do they do this? We want to buy authentic tribal things. And I said, well, you know, to be honest with you, the same company has Hopi House right up the road here. It's just a five-minute walk, and you can buy authentic American tribal art there. And there's somebody there to talk you through it and explain it to you, and there's an expert up there that'll help you with authentic craft goods if you want a real Navajo, Hopi, or Zuni souvenir. And, you know, the store, the gift shop down where most people go, didn't even have a sign telling people that all the tribal crafts were located up the path. So, you know, some of it's, you know, a Denver office actually trying to manage what's really going on at the store hundreds and hundreds of miles away.
Well, couldn't
back
you make
to the Walmart mentality. Well, when crafts and valuable handmade American items are being sold, people, the sales staff needs to be receptive and knowledgeable, and the things need to be properly marked. And unfortunately, in most of these shops, they're not properly marked.
Well, let me ask you, your enforcement idea, this idea that you start checking things at the border and making sure that they are properly marked, who's going to enforce that? I mean, we're already understaffed. We're already checking less than 1% of the containers that are coming in now. You know, we've seen over the last 10, 15 years the reality being that the enforcement just is not there. It's probably never going to be there. What they do now is they just scan for radiation. They just x-ray them. They're never going to open up the container to make sure that this little doodad or that is going to be marked.
And, you know, Rick, I'm not asking them to open up more containers. I'm asking them that when they open up the containers that they do, if the stuff isn't properly marked, turn it around.
Okay.
If they do that for 1 week or 2 weeks with just the ones that they already opened, China and other countries will get the message that if they don't mark the things properly, they could incur additional costs in turning around that stuff.
Yeah, but my only problem with this, and I like what you're saying, but my only thought is, you know, they're sending us rancid fish and chicken that is spoiling. They're sending us pet food with melamine in it and toothpaste with antifreeze in it, and we're turning it away and they're sending it right back. You know, I'm looking at this going, I like your idea. Just not sure of the possibility, given all of the other problems we have with the free trade schemes that we've gotten ourselves into.
Well, yes, free trade has got us into a heap of trouble. Every once in a while, and almost always, Congress makes decisions that affect average American citizens and working people like you and me, and they don't think about the actual implications. And part of that, unfortunately, is due to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the National Association of Manufacturers pushing an agenda that is for multinational corporations. That's who those people represent. If you think that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is connected in any way to your local Chamber of Commerce, it is not. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce represents about 14 multinational corporations that include health insurance companies and pharmaceuticals and a lot of defense contractors. It's only 14 companies that put together the big budget of the U.S. Chamber. So make sure that you understand exactly the agenda of your local Chamber of Commerce and make sure that they are not connecting with the political agenda of this corporation that represents multinational.
Well, I call the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, not only call them the International Chamber of Commerce, but also a terrorist organization.
They are. They're a terrorist organization when it comes to American jobs, unfortunately.
Because they have, and they admit it, you know, they facilitate the exportation of our livelihood.
That's right.
And when we're talking about things like, you know, just as small as the little trinkets and the souvenirs that you buy at national parks or at any of these places, which, you know, to be honest, you know, I don't think have been made in the U.S. for quite some time. They're still defending those jobs being shipped out. And I got to be honest, you know, it's not surprising to me that, you know, the things made in China and the things made by the Indians are about the same price.
It is. It is. I mean, I was helping a little lady in the store at El Tovar this weekend, and she wanted to buy a silver ring for her granddaughter. And the turquoise silver ring from China was only $4 less than that authentic Navajo little ring that she didn't even know existed. I had to have the person at the cash register pull that out from way under the bottom of the counter in the dark and pull it out up on top and show her that, look, you can buy authentic American-made tribal artwork for $4 more.
So let me ask you, you know, what do people do? I mean, when I go, see, I guess I'm a little different. When I go to these places, I always ask, you know, you got anything made around here? You have something local? Because I believe in supporting local, because eventually the job you may save may be your own.
Exactly. But you know what? It's more than that. It's recycling our dollars in our community. And if you believe in recycling and you believe in the environment, our local economy is part of that. And if you just spend your dollars in a shop local manner, then you will be really recycling your dollars locally. What's interesting is every dollar you spend at Walmart, you know, most of that dollar leaves the country before sundown.
Yep.
And that's a horrible, horrible thing. And so many small retailers, and if you love your local Main Street and your local little cafes and coffee shops, support them, because right now with this economy, boy, do they need your support. They're going to be gone, and our main streets are going to be like they were in the 80s, unfortunately, if we don't step up and support our local retailers. And that's why we have the American Made Alliance and the website findamericanmade.com. It's a great website, and you'll be able to find authentic American-made fine craft, like pottery and wonderful art jewelry, and inexpensive things as well as expensive things, at the stores where these retailers are really committed to selling American-made goods.
And what was the website again?
FindAmericanMade.com.
All right. We'll make sure we get a link over at TheRickSmithShow.com. A second ago, I think you made a very important point that I think most folks don't understand, that when we buy these Chinese-made products, we buy these foreign-made products, that the money leaves the country almost immediately, and then it has to come back. And we evidently are not selling enough to do with those dollars, so we have these massive trade deficits. So that money actually comes back to buying us. So we're actually selling off our companies. We're actually, in essence, trading good-paying jobs for what used to be cheap products.
Yes, I wish I understood what the real definition of treason was, because every time Congress opens up trade without really thinking about the fairness of the deal for us workers, unfortunately, they are committing treason, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, they don't care about us. They care about their campaign contributions.
Well, it's really, really unfortunate, and we've got to put an end to it in some way. And it's not a Democrat thing, and it's not a Republican thing, and it's not an independent thing, and it's not a Tea Party thing. It's really just saving American jobs and securing our economy in a sustainable manner.
Oh, but Wendy, you're being a protectionist.
I'm not being a protectionist. You know what? I'm not being a protectionist. I have no problem with imports as long as they're coming in honestly and they give consumers a chance to make a decision. But when they're deceptively labeled and when we have so much coming in that is dumping into our economy, that's not fair. You know, China, unfortunately, has actually invaded every one of the historic United Nations tourism sites, the UNESCO World Heritage sites all over the world, and they have decided to attack the local artisans and copy everything that local artisans made.
Yep.
So when you go to the pyramids, or you go to Aswan, or you go to Murano, all of your souvenirs now, unfortunately, are made in China.
Can't you say that they're just good capitalists?
No, what they're doing is targeting small economies that are indefensible and attacking them and killing them.
Isn't that what a good capitalist does, though?
Well, you know, there's conscientious capitalism, and then there's you know, high noon at the OK Corral.
See, because I always
say about it, high noon at the OK Corral, Rick.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I always say that I am protectionist. When I leave my house, I lock my door. I didn't dig a big moat around my house. I'm not isolating myself from the world. But I think I protect things, and I'm discriminating about what gets into my house.
Right. And you know what? If there's one thing we should be protecting, it's the cultural assets that are the micro enterprise businesses in our country. And so many people that are in business call themselves small businesses. Well, guess what? The Small Business Administration does not represent small businesses. Only 1/6 of 1% of all those dollars get to micro enterprise companies. Those are companies with less than 5 or 10 employees. And that's where jobs are created, and that's where jobs are lost in recessions.
Yep.
Those fragile, small startup businesses. And we've got to find ways, and I'm going to the White House on Thursday, actually, to discuss how to create new jobs and new micro-enterprise businesses that will lower our unemployment rate.
Well, I would love to hear what comes out of that.
Well, thank you. I would love to come back and talk to you about it more. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be terrific. In fact, you know, this topic, again, something we've been talking about on this program for years, something I believe in, the website AmericanMadeAlliance.org. You just go to our website, TheRickSmithShow.com, click on Wendy Rosen's name. It'll take you to a number of links that we talked about today. Wendy, I appreciate your time and your passion on this subject. We look forward to talking to you about your meeting with the White House.
Rick, I've been at this 30 years protecting American-made goods. And it's just now, you know, after 30 years of fighting, it's just now beginning to come to a head. And it's just now becoming important to not only Americans, but I think a lot of members of Congress and Senate. So if everyone would please remember to go to your town meetings with your congressman and your senator and talk to them about this, and especially about indelible marking and the importance of really giving consumers a choice.
Amen. I'm with you on that. Wendy Rosen, founder of the American Made Alliance, AmericanMadeAlliance.org. Thank you so much. Again, look forward to talking to you real soon.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
This is why we fight, why we
for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Today, back in 1997, Rosie Will Monroe passed away in Clarksville, Indiana. You know what? You know who Rosie Will Monroe was, Jake?
Rosie the Riveter.
Yes, she was. She was pretty much the face and the arm, if you will, of the women's movement into the labor force during World War II.
Thousands of them. Thousands of the women, because of shortages, for obvious reasons. Went into the American industry. Many of them built the planes that we used to destroy our enemies over in Germany and Japan.
So, sad day back today. Again, here's the thing. I look at this, and we've talked about that, the whole thing about American-made, about products. Like Penn State's been your big thing. That you go there and all the shirts are made somewhere else and all the doodads and whatnots are made all over the globe. Why can't we make them in Pennsylvania? Why can't you have an industry that does that? I'm sure there are qualified folks who would be happy to do it if you had policy, if you had smart vision into the future.
Well, what's amazing right now, you had this big fight in the state, as you know, because of Corbett's budget, about funding to the universities. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out. If you take products that are made in the state and you support those businesses and support those jobs, you're going to have more taxpayers paying in more money to the state coffers. Many of the products and things that they sell at the state university, not just Penn State, but Pitt, down in Temple, most of that could be bought in the state of Pennsylvania, but for whatever reason, it's not. Not only is it not bought in the United States, American, a lot of it's made overseas, which is just utterly defies logic.
But then again, it begs the question, what kind of an economy do we want to have? And I go back to the conversation about the auto bailout. And, call it what you want. I think it's a good thing. I think that helping to save an industry that has been integral to this nation's prosperity is a smart thing. You go back throughout history and you look at the war machine that built up during World War II. It was the auto plants. I look at some of these pictures and, Michael Moore, a number of years ago, took pictures of the plants in Flint, Michigan that used to be GM plants. And he put it next to a picture of what Timothy McVeigh did in Oklahoma City. And they looked identical. And he said, which is terrorism? And again, when people hear me say, well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I consider them a Republican terrorist organization. I do. You look at those photos. You look at the photo of the GM plant in Flint, Michigan that is crumbling. And you look at what McVeigh did in Oklahoma City. There's no difference. Now, the big difference, if you really look into it, is all of the lives that the GM of the world created, all of the lives that they destroyed by moving overseas, by this free market, by allowing these foreign companies to come in tariff-free so that they could pay lower wages down in the South. I mean, that's what annoys me. I want the best quality car. I want the best situation. I want companies to compete on a level playing field. But when you're doing it on a level of who's going to work for the cheapest, who's going to work for the least amount of benefits, who's going to put themselves in peril, I'm sorry, that's not a level of competition that I'm comfortable with. And that's what this whole debate, and again, you go back to Zach Womp saying, Volkswagen invested in Tennessee, a right-to-work state with less wages and less benefits, and they're winning. Of course they are, because they're paying less into the community. I mean, at some point, don't we have to wake up and ask the question, what do we want our economy to look like? Do we want a low-wage economy where people are struggling to make ends meet and they're paying high credit card bills because they need to put clothes on the kids' back and they need to put food on the table and gas in the car? At some point, don't we have to say, folks, it's not working this way. We've given the corporations too much trouble, too much power. It's time to pull some of that back. And you do that by allowing people to organize. I mean, we've got a history. We can look back to the 1880s and the 1890s, which I'm saying is where we pretty much are today, with the inequities, with the vast gulf between those who have and those who don't. When 1% of the global population controls 39% of the global wealth, there's a serious problem there. When the top 2% control more than 60% of the nation, I think you have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. And that problem is, yes, distribution. And yes, I'm talking about redistribution, because it has continually been redistributed away from us since the Reagan era. You get these people who are anti-tax. And anytime tax comes up, people throw up this barrier. It's this Pavlovian response to anything tax. You say, well, we need to raise some revenue. We need to raise a tax. Immediately, there's an immediate shutdown because we've been trained like Pavlov's dogs to be salivating at the word of, just to be fuming at the word tax without asking, well, who and where and what? Why? Without asking any real questions. Do you know, since Reagan this all started, but do you know Ronald Reagan signed 11 tax increases into law? 11 tax increases. You never hear that in the right-wing media, do you? He was the great tax slayer. Yes, he was, for the wealthy. He did drop the top marginal rate from 70% down to 28%. He did that for the wealthy. But for you and me, people at the bottom, people who are struggling to make ends meet, he raised our taxes. The Tax Reform Bill of 86, and you can check this out, raised the bottom tax rate from 5% up to 10% while cutting the top marginal rate down to 28%. You can go check that out. And again, the other thing he did, slap those unemployed people in the face by taxing their unemployment. So when you talk about taxes, talk about which ones. Who are they coming from? Why are they necessary? Why are they coming from this segment? Why are they not coming from this segment? But just don't throw up this, we're against it. Because at the end of the day, you still need to pay for schools, which we're talking about destroying. We still need to pay for infrastructure, which is crumbling under our feet. You still need to invest in society. And I just had lunch with somebody today who actually said, I've used your line of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, and people have responded when you tell them what I did. When he built the interstate system. And how did he do it? Not by begging from corporations, oh, please, will you give us some money? No, by taking tax dollars and investing in this nation. One of the last major, major moves forward to make this country an international superpower. I mean, at the end of all of this, don't we have to start looking at what's not been done with tax dollars? Instead of saying, well, we need to protect the top 1%. We need to protect the investor class because, after all, boy, they need their money and they give us jobs. If we give them all the wealth, they'll create jobs. And the reality is that's not happened. So when people are complaining about, well, you gave the auto industry a $60 billion loan. Okay, we got a good portion of that money back and we're going to get the rest of it back. But we gave the top 1-2% $86 billion. We're not getting that back. That's not coming back to us because they're not creating jobs in this country. They're creating jobs in China. They're not spending that money here. They're global citizens. So they're buying fancy homes outside the U.S. They're taking their money out of this country. I mean, I'm baffled when one of these right-wing, talking, spouting heads comes and tells me that if we give money to the investor class, the economy will grow, when it's never happened. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take a break. We're back.
The Rick
Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the labor campaign for single-payer health care prepares to meet in Washington, D.C. June 3rd through the 5th, they have a shining example of what's possible when it comes to single-payer health care in the U.S. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin has signed into law legislation that will make Vermont the home of America's first single-payer health care system. A financing package must still be passed by Vermont's legislature, and there are federal waivers required. But a strong grassroots coalition in Vermont, led by labor, supports single-payer and will keep fighting to bring it to fruition. Governor Shumlin says that Vermont's single-payer system treats health care as a right and not a privilege. At its June meeting in Washington, Labor's Campaign for Single-Payer National Meeting will celebrate the Vermont victory and discuss its strategic significance in the national fight for single-payer. Postal workers in Canada could soon be walking the picket lines instead of their routes. Jesse Russell reports.
Canadians could stop receiving mail as soon as Friday. The Canadian Union of Postal Workers notified Canada Post that if an agreement isn't reached by 11:59 p.m. on Thursday, the 48,000 postal employees represented by the union would be walking off the job. The contract for the workers expired on January 31st, and on May 25th, a nearly unanimous vote by members gave the union the authority to call a strike. The Postal Service has offered a four-year wage deal that shows an increase of 1.9% over the first 3 years and 2% in the fourth year. The union is seeking a wage increase of 3.3% the first year and 2.75% in the remaining 3 years. If a strike does occur, the union and Canada Post have agreed that certain types of mail will continue to be delivered, such as federal pensions.
If you're out of work and are willing to pack up and move, you might want to consider North Dakota. The state has 17,000 job openings and the lowest unemployment rate in the country, and the jobs available typically pay a decent wage. The state is currently in need of engineers, healthcare experts, the tech savvy, electricians, and more. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, you good workers, good news to you out there. Oh, now the good old union has come in here to thrill. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Well, you know, that's the big question. You know, as the Republicans across the country are working day and night to repeal the 20th century, sometimes you got to question the folks that are your friends. You know who your enemies are. Sometimes you got to wonder who your friends are. I look here in the state of Pennsylvania, for instance. We've got House Bill 808, this workers' comp bill, that is going to lengthen the time you're going to have to go to the company doctor from 90 days to 180 days, basically ensuring that somewhere around 95% of injured workers in this state will never see their own doctor. I think that is dangerous. I think it's short-sighted. I think it's stupid. And I think it's really a theft from workers. But again, that's the point. You look at House Bill 916, the unemployment bill they tried to ram through to steal benefits from the unemployed, to make it harder for folks to get benefits, stealing again from those least able to defend themselves. But that seems to be the MO. And again, this wave is going across the country. And I see out in Washington State, they've rammed through a workers' comp bill, another step backwards. But this time, the weird thing is it's Democrats who did this. That's why I've asked Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO President Jeff Johnson, to come and talk to us. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, you bet, Rick. Thanks for asking me.
You know, walk me through this this comp bill that has just been rammed through.
Yeah, this was a terrible tragedy, and you're right. It was led by our state's governor, who's a Democrat, by the majority leader of the Senate, who's a Democrat, and the House Speaker, who's a Democrat. Our state has never allowed. Well, first of all, we don't allow private insurers to insure for worker comp in the state. And we've never allowed settlement agreements, you know, which exist in most other states and most here. Other forms of insurance.
Yep, here in Pennsylvania.
So the governor put through this bill that not only allows settlement agreements for anyone age 50 and older, okay, it also freezes COLAs, cost of living adjustments for injured workers, both those that are on time loss and those that are on pensions. And it also deducts any award they got for a permanent partial disability award from whatever pension they may get in the future. All told, Rick, it's about a $1.2 billion benefit cut over the next 4 years.
And, you know, again, you know, I look at something like that, and my first thought is from the least among us, we're taking this.
That's right. That's right. These are the oldest and the most disabled workers, folks that, you know, we should, if anything, should be increasing their benefits so that they have some quality of life in their, you know, in their later years. And in fact, what the governor's doing is taking benefits away from them. Also, Washington State is the only state in the country where workers share in the premium for workers' comp. We pay, total 27% of the total premium in the state. So we have bought into this system for the last 100 years. And we'd always had a system that provided pretty much sure and certain relief for the worker. But now they've opened the door up to private insurers. They've taken the low road on workers' comp, and it's just pitiful.
And again, you know, this idea of the profit over people. And what I find amazing about this is, like you pointed out, workers in the state of Washington pay into it. They're, in my view, they're shareholders of this, without saying.
No, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And we fought for 5 months with the governor, giving her alternatives that she could move on. And she firmly believes that we have a system that is insolvent, and she had to take these cuts, and she didn't want to raise premiums, even though, as I said before, workers pay over a quarter of the premiums. She didn't want to raise premiums on employers. She'd rather take it off the backs of injured workers. So it's just tragic. It's just tragic.
You know what I found really tragic is that, you know, most people, when you talk about workers' comp, it's something that happens to other people. The view that I've found, and maybe you have a different view of this, but the view I've found in talking to people about this workers' comp issue, because we've got a bill here that wants to extend the time you have to go to the company doctor double from 90 to 180 days. And most people don't seem, that I've talked to, and this is my personal experience, don't seem all that upset about it. People who I know who have been injured and have gone through the process, they have a completely different worldview. But I think most people don't think it can happen to them.
I think you're right. I think, and, you know, particularly younger workers, they figure, you know, they're immune from this. But I know in our state, the official numbers are about 170,000 workers each year get injured at work. We've got the 3 million workers in the workforce. I mean, it's a pretty high percentage each year they get injured. So you would think that there'd be broader understanding in the general public. But I really think, Rick, the business community has done a stellar job in painting the story around workers' comp as if it were, you know, just basically fraudulent workers out there. We know from our own state, when we look at the fraud statistics, employers commit fraud at 10 to 12 times the rate that workers do. So, I mean, but somehow they've managed to manipulate the story.
Yeah, we never hear that. We only hear about that one guy, because everybody knows that one guy.
That's right.
You know, who got caught. They can't give you the address, but they know him because he's out there and he's driving around in that Cadillac with the welfare queen.
That's right.
And the family farmer who lost his farm because of the estate tax. They're all driving around together having a high old time. It's mind-blowing. But I would say the statistics of what that you just quoted, being Washington State with your fishing industry and still having a decent manufacturing base, not surprising that you have the number of injuries that you have.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think what we're finding in a lot of states are as well, a lot of soft tissue injuries now, you know, coming from repetitive motion. So folks that work in grocery stores and service jobs are, you know, they're racking up the injuries as well. And the truth is, Rick, you know, you look at, you know, the business community is proud of spouting out that, oh, the rate of accidents is declining. I think that's a lie. You know, basically, I think a lot of workers are not reporting accidents because they're afraid of losing their jobs.
Yep. Absolutely. You know, and I actually know several people who have done that. They, you know, well, I got hurt at home, so they didn't have to report it.
That's right.
It's just insane. And talking about manufacturing, you know, you've got a place out, Boeing out in your area, who's been in the news lately. And I wanted to get your take on it because I'll give you mine. Right-wing media has picked onto this, and they're saying this is about the issue of states having employees who join unions and those who have right to work laws. This is the fight there, and I'm saying it has nothing to do with that. South Carolina is a non-issue. There's nothing in South Carolina we should be talking about. This issue is about a company who came out in public, made a statement that they were going to retaliate against their workers, and then did it. And now you've got the law, the law of the land says workers have the right to strike, who's fighting back and saying, look, you violated the law. That's simple to me.
Yeah. No, you absolutely have the right argument, Rick. I wrote an op-ed piece for the Seattle Times, which is our state's most conservative newspaper, that basically said, shame on you, Boeing. You violated the law. You know you violated the law. Grow up. You know, I mean, we all know that companies have every right to move their production facilities wherever they want, you know, with their management rights clauses and whatnot. But they don't have the right to violate the law, retaliate against workers for exercising their legal right to strike. And that's what Boeing did. Shame on them. They need to be punished. That is the argument. You know, they're not above the law, even though they may think so. You know, and I say all that, you know, at the same time, I say that, you know, we want Boeing to locate as much production facilities as possible in Washington State. Got a highly trained, machinist workforce and engineering workforce. And, you know, we want them to stay here, but we also want them to be responsible corporate citizens. And they have not been that.
Right. But here's the thing. And this is what gets me. You know, I look at somebody like Senator Jim DeMint, who's basically said, well, these are just union thugs causing trouble, and Boeing's they're going to be vindicated, and they're going to win. And I got to be honest, part of me thinks that, you know, the law is going to say, well, you know, you were wrong, here's a slap on the wrist, but those jobs, I think, are gone.
Yeah. No, Rick, the unfortunate thing about that is I think you're right. I think those jobs are gone. I don't think they're coming back. I mean, I'm proud of the National Labor Relations Board for standing up to protect the, to read the law correctly and to try to enforce it. But in fact, is the enforcement mechanisms are very, very weak. I'm afraid that if this were appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, given the nature of that court right now, that rule against the workers, against the NLRB and for Boeing. So, but nonetheless, I think it's important to point out that at least some people believe the company violated the law. And now on June 14th, I think it is the beginning of the hearings in Seattle.
Yeah, we're waiting for that with bated. We're waiting really with bated breath because I want to see where this administrative law judge comes out, which decision, because we do know it's going to go further. But at the end of the day, it highlights the fact that we have broken labor laws that are in desperate need of reform. And to me, I thought Obama was going to be the guy who was going to do some of that. Now I'm okay with the NLRB appointments. That's okay. But at the end of the day, it's coming down to we need politicians and hopefully Democrats will be our friends to start looking at some of this stuff.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think in labor we all feel betrayed by EFCA not being brought up. You know, we were promised that it would be brought up. You know, we certainly had the votes in both the House and the Senate at one time to actually do that. If people held their commitments and really do believe that reforming labor law and the ability to organize is the only way the only solid way we're going to rebuild the middle class in this country and create more opportunities for more folks. So we just got to keep fighting for it.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take folks like you and folks across the country to stand up, fight back, organize, call your local representative, write letters to the editor. To make sure that you get the word out there. And it's an important one. Jeff Johnson, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, and keep up the fight, brother.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it, brother.
Right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
And you thought you had it bad? Sure, bucko. Your income might have been knocked down while your outgo keeps going up. And it's true that neither the corporate bosses nor political big shots give working folks any respect these days. But at least you're not suffering like Charles Koch. Wait till you hear his tale of woe. Having inherited and expanded his father's industrial empire, this poor guy is now a billionaire 21 times over, as is his brother David. But in a recent op-ed piece, Charles wails that everyone from, quote, the White House to fringe bloggers is assailing the Koch boys. We are now being vilified, mischaracterized, and threatened, he exclaims. Why are they being subjected to such an outrageous assault? Because, he writes, my brother David and I have long supported the principles that help societies prosper. Also, he adds, we believe economic freedom is essential for improving the well-being of society as a whole. So, you see, the billionaire bros are nobly standing for the social good. Therefore, they are suffering the slings and arrows of socialistic political activists who, he claims, hate freedom and prosperity. Good grief, what a crock of overcooked Koch narcissism. The economic freedom Charles and David seek is solely for corporatist elites like them. They're spending untold millions of dollars on far right-wing front groups, candidates, and lobbyists to take away the freedom of workers to organize unions and bargain on pay and benefits. They're pushing to take away the power of communities to free themselves from industrial polluters like Koch Industries. Plus, they're trying to shut down Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Head Start, and other public programs that free people from poverty and illness. This is Jim Hightower saying, when billionaires like Charles and David start claiming that they are our society's savior, grab your wallet and democratic freedoms and get your butt to the barricades. Pronto!
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Commanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Ron emailed me during the break talking about education. He asks, how do you feel about reinstituting vocational training in our educational system? The idea that everyone should go to college only diminishes a college education in his mind. He says, as a nation, we are losing the ability to make things. We are becoming the Eloy and the time machine, nothing but fodder for the Uber class. When I was in school, we had wood shop, metal shop, masonry shop as a vocational track for those that did not see college as their calling. A rethinking of our focus as a service economy needs to be done, and soon. I absolutely agree 100%. This idea, and I think my parents' generation did this. I think the baby boom generation is responsible for the situation that we're in. And yes, Jake, I'm blaming your generation because, look, the baby boom generation saw their parents go to the factories, struggle, work hard, come home beaten, broken, battered. And that generation told their children, you know, you got to be better than me. You got to do a better job than I did. And then the baby boomers went into the factories and mills and stuff, and Now that stuff's going away. They're telling their children, you need to be doctors and lawyers. And my grandfather, who was a truck driver his whole life, told me that, you know, if you end up being a truck driver, your life will have been a failure. And I remember it like it was yesterday, him saying this to me, because he didn't want me to follow in those footprints. He wanted better. He wanted me to go to college, even though, you know, as a young man, I was really not ready. I was way too immature. And, you know, a lot of things, you know, once you let me out uncontrolled, well, that's a whole show for another X-rated audience. But the reality is I wasn't prepared for it. And I ended up driving a truck for a number of years, doing exactly what he thought would be a failure. But it's that generation who looked at their children and said, you need to wear a tie. You need to work in an office. You need to be a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, some kind of professional. And as a society, we've moved in that direction, looking down on people who are truck drivers and chocolate workers and people who get their hands dirty and people who fix cars for a living. I mean, I got to be honest with you, that my mechanic, he's a lot smarter than I am. He knows how to fix my car. I don't. I used to be able to tinker around with the cars. Things are so complicated today, I don't even try.
Well, I wouldn't diminish some of the jobs, Rick, coming out of high school. I remember some of the choices. And if you could get yourself a trade, if you could have gotten yourself a trade in either a trade school or in high school, and this area is known for some of the best trade schools in the state, by the way, and you graduated and you had yourself a skill, you could make a good living, you could have a good life.
And I think that's the point Ron's trying to make is, look, you know, and I do agree with his we need to rethink this idea, this focus on service-based economy that Reagan brought us, this idea that we can, you know, we can shuffle papers or we can sell things to each other and still have a viable economy. I think, you know, vocational training at a very young age is a good thing. I think, you know, I took wood shop, I took metal class. It was all stuff that I use to this day. It's important. But had there been an opportunity to go, and I may have, who knows. But I do think, yes, we do need to refocus some on that. And as a society, more importantly, stop looking down on people who work for a living. I look at the demonization of these auto workers. Well, they don't deserve to have health care. They don't deserve a pension. They don't deserve to make a living wage. They don't deserve that. Because people are looking at themselves working in these service economy jobs that are paying $8, $9, $10 an hour. And they're looking at the guy who's working on the factory line who has less of an education but knows how to do things with their hands. And you got folks who are looking at them going, they don't deserve that. I'm not getting that. So instead of saying, how do I get what they've got, they say they don't deserve it and let's tear them down. And what does that say about us as a society? I mean, really, I'm distraught at the direction our society has taken in looking at working people. And again, you know, I'm in awe of people who can build a bridge. I'm in awe of people who can single-handedly build a house or put a car together. Because I think it takes such intelligence and such know-how and the ability to work with your hands is just amazing to me. But as a nation, there's part of me that thinks, well, you know, we look down on those people because they have to work with their hands. And I'm taken back to, you know, a situation popped up from early in my work life where a friend had gone from the union side to the management side. And he didn't get a pay increase. His benefits were actually worse. His pension was worse. His health care were worse. He had less job security.
So why'd he do it?
And this is the point. He said, I want to be able to look my kids in the eye and tell them I don't move boxes for a living, that I'm in management. And it's that mentality. It's that kind of thinking as a nation that they don't, you know, it's not about putting food on the table anymore for some folks. It's about image.
It's status.
It's status. And again, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with that. I want to have a society where, you know what, the guy who works in the factory makes a good living. He was able to put his kids through college. He's able to take a vacation, put a car in the driveway every couple of years. I'm in favor of that. But that means that those higher wages mean less profit. And if you go back to this Fox Business thing I did today, the guy from the Cato Institute kept talking about stock prices. he kept throwing out the reason that the bailout was a bad idea is because it hurt shareholders. It would hurt these handful of investors who are only get a portion of the wealth of their stock. Never mind the jobs that were saved, the jobs that are being created, the economic activity, the spiraling up, all the good things that are going to come from it. Never mind that. It was in his view, the Cato Institute's view, that it wasn't killing the investor. It was slightly harming them. It was making their investment worth a little bit less. But as a society, we were doing infinitely better. To him, that's a bad idea.
I don't understand that logic, Rick, if in fact GM would have went under. How is that not helping?
Again,
how is that not helping the shareholders?
Again, you know, wow. There's a whole disconnect of the logic.
You're going to have to explain that logic.
But again, you know, they throw this out there, and he was very, you know, stick to his point, and you got to give him credit for that. You know, when you got a talking point, you stick with it. But look, you know, it's the two Americas that John Edwards talked about. And I like John Edwards, the politician, you know, the person that I could care less about. You know, his personal life, none of my business. But the politician, he got it, man. There are two Americas. And the conversation that I had today on this Fox Business Channel really amplified that. That you had someone who's sitting in their ivory tower funded by billionaires. And then there's me, you know, a guy who was driving a truck for 20 years. Worked for trucking companies for 20 years. Busted my butt. My body's broken down. My back aches. My hip is shot. You know, at the end of this, you know, solidly working class guy who empathizes with the people who were going to lose their jobs. And now, you know what? I'm celebrating with them because they're going to be okay. They're going to be able to keep their jobs. They're going to be able to support their families. They're going to be able to help the local community grow. And they're going to be able to put money into the school district and all of these things that are going to help us recover. To me, that is a good thing. And if we had to take a little bit from those who have an awful lot, I think I'm okay with that. I think I am. And they kept bringing up, well, you know, mom and pop got her, you know, their investments, you know, mom and pop's going to do okay now because these people have money to spend. The economy is going to do all right. So to answer your question, Ron, back to the email, yeah, I'm in favor of absolutely in favor of vocational schools. I'm in favor of a whole bunch of things. Different ways of doing school. I'm a huge fan of the Montessori model, where kids basically move at their pace. They follow their passions. Granted, everything's got to be in there, but they follow their passions. And I'm in favor of that. But it's not privatized. I'm not in favor of a privatized model. Anyway, some interesting news out of Wisconsin. All six Republicans are now up for recall. I haven't seen the numbers on the Democratic side. I haven't seen anything yet. I guess they've got enough for three. They claim they have maybe three. Hasn't been verified. But again, you know, there are all six Republicans going to, and I'm amazed at that. I really am. I'm surprised to see that all six the Republicans who were able to be recalled, their names are going to be on the ballot, and there will be the opportunity to boot out six of those in Wisconsin. Some bad news today. Joanne Kloppenburg conceded today. She has, again, you know, she was one of these people. She declared victory on April 6th. And then, oh, gee, I found 14,000 votes on my laptop. Sorry. Honest mistake. Could happen to anyone. And she lost. So there you go. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. We're right back after this. Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
Big day today in Washington?
Yes, indeed. Big debt ceiling vote that was, well, not too big to fail.
Yeah, come on. The Republicans threw it out there knowing that nobody that it was going to get shot down. It was a symbolic vote.
Yes, it was. That's exactly what it was, and it failed, 97 to 318, far below the two-thirds majority that was needed for passage. It was set up that way. And actually, Democrats complained that Republicans held the vote under a fast-track procedure providing for minimal debate and requiring a two-thirds majority to pass. Ultimately, slightly more than half the Democratic caucus voted to increase the debt limit. But among the no votes were Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, the whip.
You know, at the end of this, you know, what I haven't heard, and I'm still not hearing it enough, maybe it's out there, but I'm just not hearing it enough, is we're going to have to make some spending cuts, there are going to have to be some sacrifices, but we're going to have to increase some taxes, and we're going to have to increase revenue on some folks who are doing wildly well.
Yes. Well, it's interesting you say that, because I asked Jay Carney about that at the White House today. Because, you know, we hear that Vice President Biden's talks with six bipartisan congressional leaders are going well. We know they've made some agreement over the low-hanging fruit, and now they're getting onto the more complicated things. And one of the challenges for them is that the House and Senate schedules don't sync, and so basically it's difficult for them to meet. However, I said, look, I said it very nicely, that Republicans are saying taxes are off the table, and Vice President Biden is saying taxes are on the table. What can you do to bridge this divide? How can you bring them over? What can you offer them to get them to come on board with taxes?
And what did he say?
Well, he didn't say a lot. But I believe the sound of that question is up on the Talk Radio News website, because he sort of sputtered a bit. And in the sputtering, it became quite revealing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd
urge you to go to the website and listen to the exchange.
We'll make sure we put a link up on our site at RickSmithShow.com. Because what do you do with a recalcitrant party like the Republicans that are basically willing to hold the country hostage? Because I truly believe they have a scorched earth philosophy that, it, like my petulant 2-year-old who kicks and screams when she doesn't get her way, that seems to work for them.
Well, it is interesting. You know, I don't know the answer to that, quite honestly. You know, and I'm not going to say that I'm necessarily going to use the word recalcitrant, because I'm, you know, here to provide the news. But I don't know what you do when the two sides seem so far apart and seem unwilling to come together. I don't know how you bridge that divide. Now, very interestingly, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and Majority Leader Eric Boehner both said at the weekend that Medicare was on the table in the talks. Now, I don't know what that means, but they did say that.
Well, I mean, you're going to go after where they think they can cut and save their people as much money as they can. I mean, at the end of this, had we just not extended the Bush tax cuts, I don't think we have as much a problem as we have.
Right.
But that's just another thing. So now Obama, he's going to be reaching out to the entire Republican conference?
Yes. 241 of them, I believe.
Do we know what they're going to talk about? I'm assuming the debt has got to be on the...
Debt's got to be on there. I would think that Libya is going to be on there. I'd be very surprised if Libya is not on there, quite honestly, because, I mean, you know, they are ticked off that we're over 60 days into this thing, there is going to be a big Libya vote coming up later this week. Also, I would think something on Afghanistan is going to come up. I mean, we had this big complaint from President Hamid Karzai saying he does not want any more strikes on houses, which is frankly very difficult to enforce by NATO after there was apparently a mistake and a group of children and some women were killed in Helmand province. And we've also got the beginning of the drawdown in July. So what do we do? What is the president up to on this?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to find out. But the Libya thing, I was against from the beginning. I'm against it now, and I will be against it into the future until someone can explain to me exactly what it looks like at the end. You know, what's the goal here? Which I haven't heard. I mean, it's the same knock I had against Bush going into Afghanistan and Iraq. They never had an end game. It's just, we're going.
Exactly.
But one of the Bushies, I guess, got some vindication today. The Supreme Court ruled for Ashcroft, I guess.
Yes, they ruled for Ashcroft. It's a bit complicated because everybody seemed to have an opinion. I mean, it was a 5-3 decision. Then there was a bit that was a unanimous, and then there were other bits, and then other people wrote bits. But the thrust of it is that former Attorney General John Ashcroft can't be sued for his role in the arrest after 9/11 of an American Muslim who was never charged with a crime. The court said 5-3 that he could not be charged sued personally. But Scalia's opinion does leave unresolved whether the use of the material witness statute, which is what was used here to detain him, was improper. But Scalia did say that Ashcroft was immune from liability in this case. And this is interesting because the law is not clearly established.
So that'll open the door for Congress to maybe step in or just deliberately leave it vague.
Yeah, they could do that. But, I mean, it does effectively mean that this guy has absolutely no recourse now at all. Some of the dissenters were saying, look, you know, there were some things that were clearly very wrong in this arrest. One of the reasons why he was arrested in the first place is that the FBI agents claimed, look, he's got a one-way ticket, no luggage. I believe they said no luggage going to Saudi Arabia. Well, it was simply untrue. He had a two-way ticket that was paid for, and he was coming back. Well, there's a very big difference in 2003 between somebody who's a Muslim who's going, you know, a one-way ticket and a two-way ticket. It all meant something.
Yep. It meant they weren't planning on returning anywhere. Last big bit of news, I guess the president has named a new commerce secretary, and of course the Republicans want something in return.
It's very interesting. This is John Bryson, who's an interesting mixed bag. He's a senior advisor to the private equity firm Kohlberg Kravis Roberts & Co. He's the former chairman and chief executive of Edison International, a big power company. But he also co-founded the Natural Resources Defense Council. He's also been a member of the UN Secretary General's Advisory Group on Energy and Climate Change. He's also on the board of Boeing and of the Walt Disney Company. So go figure him. Very very interesting.
Yeah, and an interesting choice. But again, for me, I look at this and you got the Republicans saying, you know, we're not going to confirm them until we get our pound of flesh, which to me, I guess, doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, if you're angry about these trade agreements, Colombia, South Korea, and Panama, holding up part of the cabinet, is that the way to go?
Yeah, they're not happy. These were negotiated during the Bush administration, and they had said previously that they are just, you know, not going to let this go through. White House press secretary today said that technical discussions with Congress are ongoing, but it would be folly, his word, to hold up the Commerce Secretary nomination over the free trade agreements. And I think they're pretty ticked off about it.
Yeah, and I would think this guy would be in favor of the trade agreements and be actually lobbying to get them pushed through. That's what gets me.
I think the Republicans in the Senate are going to be in favor of him.
Absolutely. But again, they're so used to this hostage mode that, hey, we got something we can hold him up for. We can garner our pound of flesh. But they're not going to help the working people of this country. They absolutely refuse to pass the TAA, the Trade Adjustment Assistance, which would help the people who are going to be displaced by these free trade agreements, these schemes. Just makes you wonder. Victoria, I appreciate your time. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Okay. Interesting story, Rick, coming out of the Alliance for Retired Americans. This week they released a report that was formulated by three U.S. senators and about nine organizations that represent various veterans organizations. The report was called Social Security Serving Those Who Serve Our Nation. What they were trying to do is send a clear message that cuts the Social Security for veterans and military families is unacceptable. Give you a couple of numbers and a couple of examples of what they were talking about. More than 4,000 children who lost a parent since the beginning of the Iraq and Afghanistan war now receive Social Security survivors benefits. More than 771,000 veterans receive Social Security disability benefits. Social Security currently pays for over 9 million veterans, about 4 in 10 veterans today. And the vast majority of veterans will become Social Security beneficiaries in the future. It also talked about something very relevant. Talked about veteran Sherman Gullums, who was a rising star, whose career was cut short at the ripe age of 29, due to a severed spinal cord. Thanks to Social Security disability insurance, he was able to continue caring for his children. He got a college degree and was able to develop new skills and now works as an advocate for veterans. There's also a very poignant story about Dabney Montgomery, who was a former member of the Tuskegee Airmen during World War II, whose contributions to the country as a civil rights and community service advocate continues to the present day. Now at the age of 89, Social Security is 70% of his monthly income, not unlike many seniors in this country.
Yeah, we talked to the guy who, on Friday, the guy who wrote the report.
So some good things coming out of Congress. We talked about what was happening down in Alabama, and oftentimes labor unions get a dark mark, and those who, on the right especially, don't like labor unions, take every shot to give them a shot. But what is really underreported is their contributions to this nation in times of real crisis. And just to give you an idea of what labor contributed, on the day after tornado down there in Alabama, members of the United Steelworkers from Fairfield were on the ground collecting supplies, providing ice and people power to help. That was from United Steelworkers 2122. They also opened their union hall to the community. AFT, teachers who take a lot of criticism, their locals gathered and brought supplies into the impacted area. Communication Workers of America, CWA, volunteered for the phones and assisted in delivering food to survivors. United Food and Commercial Worker members joined the effort as part of Feeding the Hungry program, and the electrical workers cooked food and delivered it throughout the area in addition to collecting donations to the victims. the last numbers that were reported out of there, there were at least 1,700 Alabamans that were injured, and another 238 confirmed dead, and hundreds more are missing. Very, very devastating. And unions are out there absolutely doing their fair share to do what they can for the suffering humanity down there. We talked about the prison industry, Rick, and how much money we spend not only in our society, but in our state. An article today in Harrisburg concerning Pennsylvania prison inmates. Apparently, Pennsylvania's made decision to return some of them. All the present Pennsylvania inmates housed in Michigan have returned to Commonwealth prisons. Department of Corrections announced this week that 1,111 inmates housed in Michigan are now coming back. Approximately 2,000 inmates had been moved to Michigan and Virginia because there was no longer room in Pennsylvania prisons. For a variety of reasons, the Pennsylvania prison population has leveled off, making it possible to return the inmates from Michigan. And apparently the man who is now heading the Corrections Commission in Pennsylvania has made a decision that he's going to make a conscious effort to try to reduce the population in this state by better education, by perhaps advocating for lighter sentences in certain offenses. And by doing that, you can reduce the population and also give them perhaps a little better chance of getting back into society, becoming productive citizens.
Education, that's a good idea. Maybe education. Maybe we shouldn't be cutting $1 billion from education, 56% of the higher education budget. Maybe that'd be a start, wouldn't you think?
As a start, but you and I both agree, Rick, we spend entirely too much money in prisons, and there are some people in prison, and we could do a whole show on this. There are some people in prison who are probably in there longer than they should be, and there's even some question whether they should even be in there. And as a society, is this the kind of society we want to incarcerate more and more and more? And it looks like we're advocating or allocating less and less for education for our children. Somehow those priorities are a little bit skewed.
There's a lot of profit in locking people up.
I think as a state we need to look at that. Very, very interesting report coming out of a story coming out of New York. New York Attorney General is suing the federal government over natural gas drilling. New York Attorney General is suing the federal government to compel a full environmental review of proposed regulations for natural gas drilling in the Delaware River Basin. Eric Schriedemer says in the federal lawsuit filed Tuesday that welfare of those living in the basin of millions of New Yorkers who rely on the drinking water must be thoroughly weighed. He says the Delaware River Basin Commission, with approval of federal agency, proposed regulations without doing a full review as required by law. Now, that also, the Delaware River Basin, Rick, also includes not only southern part of New York, it includes Pennsylvania, eastern Ohio, and West Virginia. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that, depending on the decision by a federal judge. There could be some interesting developments. It's my report.
And we will see. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. This is the Rick Smith Show. More working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
On July 5th, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You want to email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. Some interesting news. The man who was the key player in pushing Michelle Bachmann out into the political arena, evidently on Monday, was arrested on domestic assault charges. He's been arrested, accused of felonious domestic assault by strangulation and misdemeanor fifth-degree assault, according to the Pioneer Press out in Minnesota. He was arrested right around 4:20 p.m. in Woodbury, Minnesota, and the 41-year-old real estate broker was booked and released on $25,000 bond. So I'm guessing felonious domestic assault by strangulation is he had her around the neck. And, you know, I've felt those moments sometimes. But here again, you know, the fact is, you know, this wouldn't be news unless it was attached to Michelle Bachmann somehow. And I thought this would be a good time to talk about Michelle Bachmann.
That's a pretty serious charge.
Well, but again, it happens all the time, I'm sure. It doesn't make national news. The only part of it that makes national news is he is allied somehow with Michelle Bachmann, whom I love. I mean, I got to be honest. I'm a big fan. Not politically, of course, but, you know, I'm a big fan nonetheless. But, you know, have you seen her numbers polling-wise? Right there above Sarah Palin in the polls? And what just kind of boggles my mind is Rudy Giuliani is leading some of the polls. Nobody is talking about Rudy Giuliani being in the race. So what I'm kind of thinking these pollsters are just, you know, reaching behind and popping something out. Let's stir something up. Let's give people something to talk about.
I mean, if you want to talk about a flip-flopper, look at Giuliani and some of his, I mean, he has been pro-gay rights. He's been pro-choice. What are some of the other?
He's been pro-adultery.
No, I'm serious. His positions on a lot of key issues, social issues that the Republican right is very big on, he has been on the wrong side. And, you know, his chances of winning a primary are extremely thin. Him and Santorum are bringing up the rear. I got to tell you that.
Was that intended, the whole rear comment, was that intended for Santorum?
No, you know, since you brought up Santorum, there's something I was thinking about. You know, at one time.
He didn't get it.
Yeah, I did. No, I did.
Like everything else, right on by.
That's why I'm bald, you know. But seriously, it wasn't long ago, Rick, that Rick Santorum, if you remember, is being criticized by his fellow Republicans for campaigning for who? Arlen Specter, yep. If you remember that. He was considered at one time kind of a mainstream, but boy, he veered off. He really went off the deep end of the right. He did that about the last 6 months of his campaign in 2006, and since then, he's just about out of sight over here in the right. I mean, I can't see him gaining an awful lot of votes out there.
He's trying to play the Tea Party angle. And I would never have voted for Arlen Specter. There's just no way. One, for the reason you just pointed out, that Santorum was out there pushing for him. And two, I blame Specter for Alito and Roberts. I blame him for pushing it through without much of a question. I mean, Alito should have been met with much more scrutiny. And Roberts, you know, Mr. I'm going to call balls and strikes, maybe a little questioning. I mean, if you remember the confirmation hearings, wasn't much in the way of hearings. It was more of just a formality.
Well, but I do believe they were asked, and they basically gave the reply that, no, we're strict constructionists. We're not activist judges. Well, you know, I mean, come on. Look, they have their decisions are probably as activist as any decision in the last 50 years. And I don't think that's an overstatement.
And again, I go back to the reason why I'm voting for Obama or any Democrat come November of 2012. Anthony Kennedy is not getting any younger, neither is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Whoever the next president is probably going to appoint two Supreme Court justices. If we end up with one more, just one more, Alito or Scalia or Thomas or
conservative court.
Or Roberts, it will be for the next 20 years a conservative court. So that's, again, to me, one of the really big important things. And you look at the pro-corporate decisions that have been coming down, even with the moderating tone of Kennedy, which is 71% of the decisions that business brings before the court, they win. Kind of scary to me. Anyway, in Cleveland, my hometown, according to UPI, the fans who went to see the Padua Franciscan High School kickball game, they got their money's worth. They have set a Guinness Book of World Records, 51 hours of kickball, 475 innings. Continuous.
Is that kind of, enlighten me a little bit, that's kind of, you play it on a baseball diamond, except you kick the ball, is that the
general idea? Yeah, it's like when you're in grade school, they roll it to you and you kick it.
And then run.
And then run.
Okay.
And then they hit you with the ball before you get to the base.
51 hours?
51 hours.
That's a lot of hours.
That is a lot of hours. 475 innings. And you know the thing that bothers me? Not a score. They didn't give the score in the report.
I hope that was a fundraiser.
No, it was one of these things for Guinness, for the Guinness Book.
No, just for Guinness?
Yeah, it was, hey, let's set a record. So they did it. It was attended by the Cleveland Indians mascot, Slider. You know, I took my kids to the baseball game here in Harrisburg. And we went on Sunday, with some friends. And I swear, they have the most mascots on site. There was Grounder and Rascal and whatever, Curious George and Bob and Jim and the Red Robin thing. I mean, just tons of mascots. And, you know, I guess if they're paying the way to get in, it's good for business. But I got to tell you, I love that little park over there. They have done such an amazing job. And as I'm told, all union labor. That's commitment. That's why I patron. I go there. Take the kids. It's a wonderful time. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for being here tonight. I want to thank our guests. It's always great to talk to Jeff Johnson from the Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO. And again, you know, I look at that Boeing situation, and it's just mind-blowing that the right has been able to frame the message again in their way. But anyway, thank you for being here. If you missed any portion of the program, go to thericksmithshow.com. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the good of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Working hard!